This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Once upon a time, two men decided if they were making the cut. Then they made the cut. And now JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond. Because it's no holds barred.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 6 of No Holds Barred, the podcast hosted by the Property Brothers of Place to Be Nation. I, JT, am here to sell you on the podcast, and my partner Aaron is here to demolish it for you, and then hopefully all together we'll build it back up into something presentable. Aaron, how are you?
I'm great. I once built a tremendous hotel on Baltic Avenue and ran that whole street for an entire week.
Very nice.
Demolished everyone who came by.
Which Property Brother do you think you are out of the two of us?
I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't understand this reference, and I'm upset that you brought it up to begin with. What is it?
You've never seen The Property Brothers?
No.
Heard the reference?
It?
All right, so it's a show.
Look, as soon as you said Property Brothers, all I could think of was the Monopoly guy, and I'm like, there's only one of those.
Well, that you know of.
Yeah.
It's a show on, I believe, TLC, and these two brothers that look alike. It may or may not be lovers. I'm not sure what the deal is, but
well, I hope they're lovers.
One of them is a real estate agent. And the other is a contractor. So what they do is they do these shows where, like, they'll look for houses and they'll work together. And the one property brother who's the realtor will then sell the house to someone. And then the contractor will come in and fix it up. So they work together.
So they're just running a scam, basically.
Well, yeah, I'm sure at some level, yes, it is a scam. But they're handsome men, so they do
it. Are their names Hugh Honey and Vic Vinegar?
Their names are sadly Jonathan and Drew, and it pains me that I know that. But
Drew
here we are.
Drew is not a good name. I'm sorry for all the Drews that are listening, but it's not working.
Do you have a problem with Andrew or just Drew?
No, Drew. Andrew's fine.
Okay. So what about people named Andrew that go by Drew?
Nah, see, it's Drew. Drew, it just feels icky and gross. Oh, maybe it's because of Drew Carey.
So he's gross to you?
Well, he's pretty hideous. Like, I don't mean physically, but like, there's just something monstrous about him.
Really?
Like it's the forehead. He's got a very large forehead. He's got that spiky hair. I mean, I'm picturing...
Not anymore. You're picturing old school Drew Carey.
Yeah, but the new school Drew Carey is a fucking skeleton. Like, that's also not
creepy,
fun
yeah.
to be around.
So we went to high school, this kid, Peter, that looked just like Drew Carey. Legit. I mean, he had, like, the spiked hair, the glasses, and we would call him Drew Carey and make nonstop Drew Carey references.
Yeah.
And he showed up senior year with no glasses, contacts, and his hair down into the side. He literally just changed his look to not look like Drew Carey.
Well, because you bullied him for how many years about
being absolutely.
The fat comedian on TV?
Well, he shouldn't look like him then. I mean, what do you want? He looked just like him. It was like,
did he wear, like, I always pictured Drew Carey in business attire.
Well, we went to a Catholic school, so he was always dressed up, like in a button down and slacks. So, yes.
Ugh, like, I don't know. If you had to make love to Drew Carey or Chris Farley, who would it be?
I guess Chris Farley. I feel like he'd at least be a little more wild.
Yeah, right?
I mean, Drew just want to do missionary and then roll over and have some Buzz Cola and pass out.
Drew would just be like, come already. Oh, God. Drew Carey. How do we get on Drew Carey?
The
Monopoly guys.
Drew Property. I assume that's our last name. All right, so here we are again. It's been a while, but we're back, and this is episode number 6. And we always start the show off, Aaron, with a no holes barred moment of the day. Anything you got today to talk about?
So last week, my wife writes me, "I'm at Walmart. Do you need me to get you anything?"
Mm.
And I jokingly wrote, "Yeah, get me all the old school video game systems they have." And then she did.
Wow.
She brought them home, like the NES Classic and the SNES Classic and a Sega Genesis one. And I'd always kind of not gotten, like, the point of them because, like, I have all the games as emulators.
Right, right.
My controllers have been breaking. And so, anyways, she brought them as a joke, but then I said, fuck it. I kept them, right?
Oh, so it was the joke that she just assumed you'd go return them? So, ha.
Yes. Yeah, so that's really stupid. The joke's on her.
Yeah.
But no, like, I was really happy. Like,
women.
They were really – Yeah, idiots. No, but and so I think everyone probably has a game that they played as a kid, like, you know, like a game you would rent, or even maybe a game you had.
Right, Property
as
Brothers,
a child.
The game. Yep.
Yes. Two Monopoly men running.
You're
gonna
look them up, by the way. I'm telling you, they're handsome men. You're gonna.
I'm gonna look them up. I believe that they're handsome.
The Bewitching.
So, what I did was, but anyway, you know, you'd rent a game. I don't know if you rent. Did you used to rent games? Or were you one of those losers like Drew?
No. I did rent games, yes.
So,
but,
like, if you rented the wrong game, your weekend was destroyed.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, as a kid, I was never able to beat Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest. And lo and behold, it's on this NES system.
Ooh.
So, over the course of 2 days, I fucking beat that shit.
Nice.
I beat it into the ground. I whooped Dracula. I did all the stupid shit, like kneeling with the crystal. If you don't know what I'm talking about, whoever played the game will know. I survived all these curses. These Property Brothers are handsome. I will
told you, right?
There's a picture of one where he's got like a sledgehammer over his
right.
shoulder.
Does he have like a little kind of cock smirk?
Of course he's got a cock smirk. He's got a cock in his ass right now.
So wouldn't you buy a house from that man?
No, I buy my houses from women, I think. Women I trust more with houses.
Women that just buy you video games.
Yes. And anyway, so I beat Castlevania 2 after about a 30-year sabbatical, but I feel great about it.
Yeah, see, the renting thing, I did do it, but it did bother me, too, sometimes. Because I'm like, I only had it for – like, it was constantly in my mind. I only had it for, like, a few days. You know what I mean? And, like,
right.
Oh, so I have to play this. I cannot play anything else. You know, like, it was that feeling of – I was bound to this game.
See, I would use it as a tool to get more games from my parents.
Right.
Be like, oh, I love this one. I played it. And they'd be more comfortable buying me games that they know I already liked.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. I did like – I usually would end up buying, especially as time went on, because I was more just a sports game person, you know?
Right.
So I'd end up just purchasing the sports games, except for Family Feud for Super Nintendo. That game
was awesome. So good. But even the Nintendo one's good too.
Mm.
I'm sure it's horribly racist right now, though.
Jeopardy for regular Nintendo was great as well.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. My big rental was – I had a cousin who lived with us for a while, and he rented Ultima 4 Quest of the Avatar for like 2 months. And I remember playing that like to death. That was the big rental for me.
We should do a show, a podcast, where we rent – I mean where we rank our top five games by system. I don't think that's been done.
No, not well.
Mm. Oh, yeah, true. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't mean that.
True Property.
Property Bros, right here. Drew and what's the other guy's name? Felix?
Jonathan,
because one of them in a picture here has a kilt and he's slashing. These guys are fucking hot, man. I'd do both.
I told you.
Yeah. I wouldn't buy a house from him, but, one of them's got a wife.
You'd bang them in the house, though.
Oh, man. See, when you were talking about, like, if they were lovers, I look at them now. They're not lovers. They're just fucking. Like, they're not. They're just in complete lust with one another.
Just brothers that fuck. Okay.
Do you think – hold on. Do you think there is less of a stigma for incest when it's homosexual incest? Like because the chance of an abomination happening – is not possible.
Do you think people
care less about – that's why we're okay with like the twin fantasy, right?
Right, like the sisters, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Like do people care less?
I guess maybe in the threesome it's not as bad. They're not necessarily involved with each other.
Right.
One of the sisters may just watch and then alternate.
Yeah, I guess. But I would imagine that that's not the only fantasy that people have about twins. They probably imagine the whole general threesome without even thinking of the incest.
I always just think of the – was it Bud Light commercial? And the twins. Scott and I used to talk about that a lot in the early days of the podcast, I think.
Is that the one with the frogs?
No, it's not the one with the frogs.
Does Bud have a commercial with two frogs fucking? Because that would sell some beer.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, it was Chorus. It might have been Chorus. I'll figure it out. All right. My No Holds Barred moment of the day. Not as fun as games, but fun and games. So we had a wedding last night. And it was the first one our children have come to that was like a formal wedding. Like they meant to just kind of laid back, low key weddings, but this is the first like we're sitting at tables with a set meal, you know, like a full on official wedding. Because my daughter
so there
was
are rules.
In the wedding. Yes, there were rules. And so my wife and daughter went early and dropped them off because my daughter would be there because she was in the wedding party. So then my whole plan was, and I orchestrated it perfectly. So it was going to be a late night, and my thought was, okay, I need to get my son to nap because if not, he'll probably be a disaster if he's just up all day and doesn't nap. So I took him to the gym, and I literally spent like an hour and a half working out so he would play in a little playroom and just wear himself out. I watched
like, – I thought you were about to say you worked him out for like an hour.
I worked him out.
To make him tired.
Just to pass him out. So I worked out for an hour and a half. So he would play in the little playroom that they have. I watched two episodes of Better Call Saul. So that was good. I did that. So then I took him into the gym. We played basketball for like a half hour. Like to continue to wear him out. And we get home and we were kind of wrestling. You know, like I'm really doing what I can to make him tired so he'll nap. So we drop the girls off. And on cue, he falls asleep. And like my whole plan, I was so happy. My plan has worked to perfection. So we get home. I carry him in. I even get him to transition from the car seat to the couch, and he stays asleep. And I'm like, good. So I go take my time. I get ready, get all dressed, and I come down. I'm going to wake him up, get him dressed. And he wakes up just like a motherfucking piece of shit. I mean, he was just on fire. Just like, you know, it, just letting me have it. Just so pissed off. And I am like doing my best. I promised myself I'd stay patient. I'm like, here's some fruit snacks. Here's some goldfish. You know, like, whatever the fuck you want, you can have. Just shut up.
Yeah.
So I get him in a little suit, and he is just – I'm dressed up. I'm dressed up. He's dressed up. He's in a suit, and he is in my face pointing and yelling. And I'm like – I feel like I am like at work with like a midget boss just screaming in my face. And that was my no-holds-barred moment of the day. And I went and later had like 9 vodka soda waters at the wedding. Just got fucking wrecked after getting screamed at by this diminutive little boss of mine that I have running around. So it was just funny because I've never really seen him. He's never really worn like a little suit. So it was just funny seeing him in this little – man's outfit just yelling at me for no reason.
At you in the suit.
Yes, he's wearing the suit, screaming at me, and I'm just sitting there in my like shirt and tie, like I'm at work. You know, like it's just the whole situation was like very belittling. Like this little man is yelling at me for no reason because he's hungry and tired, and he's laying into me. So fuck that.
You fucking you made him do like 8 sets of chest press. Like he's tired, man.
It's like, fuck you. You wore me out, douche. That's what you get. All right, speaking of worn out is the GWE tag team gimmick that we have going on here. And we are getting close. I think we'll be opening the balloting soon. So hopefully everyone's been doing the research. And you and I on the show, since we've started it, have been breaking down some teams that are in contention either at the top or the bottom of the list. And we're going to go into 2 tonight because I think one's going to take us a while and the other one's probably going to be a rough ride, but we'll get there. So the first team we're going to talk about is, we've mentioned them before, as a potential number one contender on the list, and that is Matt and Jeff, the Hardy brothers, not the Property brothers. See, it all comes together. It all comes together. So, all right, we've talked about this before, like who are your top teams, and they've always kind of been thrown up as one of the options, but like, give me a synopsis of where you're at now with them and why they rank so highly.
Well, I mean, when I started my list, my working number one was the Usos. I was like, I think that's probably who it's going to be, but we'll kind of see. And then every time I started thinking about the Hardy Boys, they climbed and climbed and climbed and climbed. And I think at this point, it will be very difficult for anybody to knock them out of the number one spot for me. Mm-hmm. Obviously it's not set in stone yet, but like when I look at the teams that are around them, I just don't think any of them have the longevity, the influence, the match quality, the different types of matches. I mean, because they have different types of matches at different stages of their career, which are completely different in scope too. So I don't know who would knock them off because everybody I put against them, the Hardys, seem to come out on top. So I'm pretty sure they're going to end up number one for me. What about you?
Yeah, my working list, they're at the top. I'm on record as being a Hardy brother, Mark. Seeing them return in Orlando was awesome. Just a tremendous moment. The pop was great. And probably their last great WWF moment as a tag team. I mean, they have the really good match at the bar. In the cage, which is probably their last great dirty match, but their last great moment is that WrestleMania. I mean, that was
Is the cage before or after the 2 out of 3 falls,
or is it the Iron Man? Which one's the really good one?
Oh, they're all good. None of them are bad. Like,
no,
they're
but
all...
there's one that was like getting like real love. Is like a,
I really like the Iron Man.
Maybe it was the Iron Man I'm thinking of, not the cage.
Yeah,
I know they had the series, and one was like excellent.
Yeah.
And I think they stand out, too, amongst their peers. Like, we've talked about this when you compare them to Edge and Christian and the Dudleys. The Hardys, to me, have the most straight matches of the three teams that are great as well. Like, they're not just... Like, they have the great garbage matches. But then they pop on top of that with all their other stuff, which is big. For me, anyway. Because it shows that their versatility as a team and that they can go beyond just the ladder gimmick. The big one that jumps out to me is Eminem at Rumble 07. They have the good stuff with... Don't they have a match at World's Greatest Tag Team, I think, in 07 as well?
Sure. I would even go earlier and Survivor Series... They're the reason why you can't make December to Dismember the worst pay-per-view of all time.
Right. That's a garbage match, too, though.
No, it's great. It's just a straight tag match.
No, aren't they Oh, that's Armageddon I'm thinking of.
Armageddon is the 14 ladder. Yeah.
Who do they fight at that one?
At December to Dismember.
Is that Eminem as well?
Yeah, and then the next one, it's Eminem, the London Kendrick, and Regal, Taylor.
Taylor, yeah. Yeah, well, that's crazy, too.
Yeah, that one's also great, you know, but like just the straight tag match at December to Dismember is fantastic.
Right, so you got that one and Rumble 07. Both are great. 07's a really strong year for them. They reunite in 06 when Jeff comes back, and then I think that's the run that really puts them up over the top to get them into number one.
Yeah.
They will probably just be in contention from their initial run, but them reuniting and just going on this tier of just great matches, and they feel so much more like matured as a team. They both had these singles run. They feel like more like main event stars just coming together, solo stars coming together to work as a team versus just like a team of guys that could maybe wrestle singles every now and then. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, but not in a bad way.
Right.
Because that can happen in a bad way, right? Where it kills the division.
Yeah, no, not at all. Because they had the cred as a tag team. But now they feel like, you know, even bigger deals. They feel like better wrestlers. Like a lot of Jeff's issues in the early days were a lack of ring psychology. I feel like he cleaned that up when he went to the Indies and Ring of Honor a bit and he comes back. Was he in TNA in between too? Wherever he
went. Yes, he was.
Yeah, so that run he had, he comes back and his psychology becomes more sound during that run too. So I think that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They have some good matches throughout that whole year. Kaden Murdoch, World's Greatest Tag Team, Eminem. A lot going on throughout 07 that helps really build their resume. So, and then, you know, just on top of all the TLCs, the ladder stuff, the tit, just all that stuff. I mean, just high quality matches. They have good angles. What do you think of them as far as like promo and talking, though?
It's not about what they say because they're not great talkers, but
right.
I always thought the characters worked really well because they transitioned who they were as characters into their matches. So you got they were Team Extreme, but they wrestled like Team Extreme.
Right.
Like, as opposed to, like, again, I'm not trying to diminish Edge and Christian for whoever's saying it or who's worried about it, but, like, Edge and Christian were kind of goofballs on the mic, but that didn't translate to the matches. And I don't think that's a bad thing, right? But what I mean by that is that, like, the Hardys, their whole character was about extreme, taking risks, and everything in their matches spoke to who those characters were. I mean,
right.
They even lose at Survivor Series 01 because of it.
Right, yeah. Right? And it would cost them often. Like, that was always a through line. That even in those ladder matches, like WrestleMania and the TLCs, like, Jeff would always do the one crazy spot that he didn't really need to do. That would cost them. Right. That would end up hurting them. So lots of good stuff. They also had the Forgotten One with Edge and Christian. The ladder match on Raw, the first TNN Raw, if you remember that, in September of 2000. That was a good match, too. I think that's the one where they finally connect on the spear, right? Or is that SummerSlam? When's the one they first, where Edge finally hits the spear while Jeff is hanging? I think it's that match.
I think so.
Part of the story, too, is like their, you know, how they come together with Lita. And their relationship with her, Team Extreme, where she's the extreme version of them on the women's side. Like, I think that was a big part of it. And they were just super over. They were clearly the most over of the three teams. The Dudleys, I'd argue, were over, but a lot of it has to do with the tables, you know, the garbage. The Hardys were over on their own. Just, you know, when they tear the shirts off and the crowd going crazy and the black lights and everything, you know, just everything they had going on. It just spoke to, you know, the 90s spoke to that alternative counterculture, and the Hardys were speaking almost like, I don't know, how would you like,
well, I mean, like, they just
like,
they
like
were, they
the
were
punk
that
boy band, right? More than anything, you know, like, you have the alternative were kind of like ECW and the Raven and the W, like, all kind of grungy. Edge and Christian were kind of the sardonic, sarcastic internet guys, and then you had the Hardys were kind of like, you know, they kind of had the, I'm trying to think of like a, I don't
they
know.
Were like,
I don't want to say like Eminem, but something like that.
They were
you
like
know?
The skaters. Like, I don't
right,
know.
Right, yes.
Like,
thank you. think.
Like in my school, like you had the group of skateboarders, right? Yes. During that period. That's kind of what they were. Like, and they dressed like that and they moved like that and they took risks like they took.
Right.
So I think it was easy to connect with them early. And it was easy to connect with them early too, because you get to watch them grow.
Yes.
You, like, they were always a team, right? I think that's what kind of puts them over the top with like a team like over a team like Edge and Christian, because they weren't always a team, right? Like they were you cared a little bit less about them as a team because they were two singles guys that came together. Now they became a great team there. Okay. Everyone, they're a great team. Have them top 11. Okay. But you got to witness the Hardys' evolution as a team, as opposed to say the Dudleys, who kind of came in and were already considered a very top tier team. Like, we got to see them with Michael Hayes and that bullshit. And, like, we got to see their freak title win against the Acolytes they beat to win the titles? Yeah. So, like, you know, we got to see them grow. And that's what was really cool about the 06 is that when they come back as a team, now they're the mature team in the division with younger versions of them.
Right.
Like Eminem, London and Kendrick. Like, it's really kind of fascinating to watch how that worked. Mm-hmm. And everything that happened after 2017 is just gravy.
Right.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like they go from like being the kids to the legitimate contenders to the veteran team to now the legend team.
Right. Yeah, and they are the legend team. I mean, they are very much the legend team. And then, you know, I think part of that is on Jeff as a single star, like how much he exudes the star power. And a lot of it speaks to what Matt's done outside. But, you know, we're not here to talk about Matt as a singles guy. We've done that in the last project. But all the work he did, even in WWE with his other characters, helped a lot, too. When you know, all the V1 stuff helped his cred when they became the Hardys again in 06 and all the Edge stuff and all that. So, yeah.
They also never lost things that they gained. Like, you know, like Matt Hardy was never, like, as part of Jeff Hardy, he was never like Matt Hardy version one in that team, but he still took a lot of the things that he learned, like the moves he did as version one or the mannerisms that people could still connect to.
Right.
Like, it was a consistent growth. He didn't do the thing where he throws stuff away that he's not using anymore.
So where would you have had them if they break up in 03 and never get back together?
They're probably top 15, I think.
Yeah, just on that run alone.
Yeah, I mean, like, and just to talk about, I mean, we keep kind of dancing over the garbage matches with the other teams, almost like saying they're great, but let's look at their other stuff too.
Right.
And there's value in that, and I agree with it. But I actually think that they are very much the stars of those matches.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, without them in there, like, if you put another team in there in their place, I don't think they work nearly as well. And I'm not saying that to knock the other teams. Mm-hmm. It's more just a credit to how over and how important they are to that little tag world.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they're always the most over in their own way. Like, I think if the Dudleys had won those matches, the crowd would have kind of been like, all right, you know, cool. Edge and Christian win, a lot of heel heat because they're the douches of the division. And if the Hardys would have won any of those, I think it would have been like ballistic, you know?
Yeah.
Especially at SummerSlam when they're in North Carolina.
I think
that would have been a big one. And then what shouldn't be counted out too, I mean, the tag match is great too at Unforgiven or really, really good at Unforgiven. Then the Conquistador stuff is kind of goofy, but it's funny as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff
good
in there.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're going to struggle to find bad Hardy Boys matches.
Oh yeah. No, there's not many.
No. Like, I can't even really name any. And I just watched through the end of 2006 and they're just awesome. Like, I can't speak enough good things about how good they are.
And I think it speaks to their ascension, too, in that the tag at Survivor Series, when they're with DX and they do not feel like kids out of place. You know what I mean? Like,
nope.
they are, like, even to DX in that match.
Yeah, but that's a funny match, too, because, like, the most over one is Punk.
Right.
Barely wrestled. But, yeah, you're right. Like, and then they put them over Orton and Edge and, well, the others are just kind of, like, it's Nitro and Test and Mike Knox, right? But yeah, they don't hesitate at all to put them over.
Right.
I mean, Edge and Orton are two very important main event guys at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They're not nobodies. So yeah, like it's and we didn't even really speak at all about how cohesive they are in ring as a team. Like they work so well together in terms of their tag team moves, in terms of like they look enough alike and they move enough alike, mm-hmm. but they're also just different enough in their styles that it gives you variety. Like, I mean, I would say, like, looking at like a team like London and Kendrick, who I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, but it's like they wrestle so similarly.
Right.
Whether it's one or the other. Now they're a great team, but I find the Hardys just have enough nuanced differences that it gets you invested equally but differently in each of mm-hmm. them.
And the fact that they have their own separate moves as well. Like, a lot of tag teams have a tag team move, which they kind of did, but they also had their own separate. Like, Jeff would do the Matt would do the Twist of Fate, and Jeff would do the Swanton, and that was their move. So, like, that spoke to it as well. You kind of get invested in their individual finish. No, I mean, this had an insane crowd connection. It's just, it was next level from the start, really, or at least from when they really become the Hardys and they break out of the kind of being the new brood and all that bullshit, and they dump Terry. So really, when 2000 starts, so the tables match at the Rumbles is really the coming out party. They have good matches before. They have the ladder match at No Mercy is a big one.
The tit for sure.
The tit's always strong.
Look, yeah. I'm always down for tit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the tit is always big and it's in your face and it's great.
I mean, we talked a lot about having sex with men earlier, but like,
right.
I could watch that ladder match anytime.
Correct. But the Rumble is really like their, oh shit, you know, like, here we go. Like, Jeff hitting the Swanton off the entranceway through the table. Like,
so good.
That's crazy. So yeah, that's really their big coming out there.
Like, when you look at what a ladder match is and what high spots are now too, I think you have to give them a ton of credit for influencing that. Because before them, ladder matches were not that. Like, they were – I mean, we'd had two, right? We had had – two big ones. We had WrestleMania 10 and SummerSlam 98, really,
and
right?
And SummerSlam 95.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's kind of – I find it's the same as WrestleMania 10, like, in terms of style.
Okay.
Like, just – it's just – it's like a – like, I look at – The Rock and Triple H is a very different matchup than Razor and Michaels. Mm-hmm. But then Razor and Michaels, the matches are similar. So, yeah, like, when you look at, like, the ladder matches you get today, whether it be a Money in the Bank, whether it be, like, those crazy things they're doing at WrestleMania for a few years in their Continental title, like, I think you end up owing a lot to the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, but especially to the Hardys, because they really kind of started this whole kind of procession of this.
So, going way back to my trail of thought earlier, would they be number one even if they didn't come back now? If they had left in 2009 and that was it as a team?
I think they'd be in the conversation. They might still do it, but I think
17 puts them even more over the top.
17 is like the slam dunk.
Okay.
Like, you know, like, the Hardys are like getting good layups, you know, and they might win the game, but this is fucking Shaq dunking on Muggsy Bogues. Screaming in his face.
It's an awful way to say that. They're getting nice layups. Yes, they are getting nice. I compare more to, yeah, they're nursing a lead late, and then they get a breakaway, steal, and dunk, and ice the game. That was that comeback at WrestleMania.
But at which point do they stomp on Muggsy Bowes' genitals until he can't have children?
All the time.
Okay, good. As long as that happens. So, yeah, like, it's funny because, like, at first, I kind of dismissed them outright. Like, nah, you know, they're just the spot guys. But it's like, who do you see possibly contending with them?
No, I mean, we've talked about it, right? It's Usos, New Day.
Yeah. And I guess it's just going to depend on how much you value whether they were a main event act or not.
I don't think, like, the New Day is any more a main event than they are.
No, I don't think so either. Like, I mean,
and the Usos definitely aren't.
No, like, but I'm talking more like maybe some – I could see maybe someone putting Demolition ahead of them if that was the crux of – I wouldn't, but if that was the crux of their argument, right? Like, or the Outlaws. Like, these guys are so over, so important.
See, the Hardys are just important and over, so it's hard. I just can't see any metric by which the Hardys aren't at least, like, tied for first in, like, in any of the stuff. Work – I mean, maybe you could say versatility because they didn't really have, like, a heel run, but I don't think that's as important with the tag stuff because a lot of it's so fleeting. So, like, to me, whatever. But and Jeff really should never be a heel anyway. So
I don't know. Like, his heel TNA run in 11 before he got kind of all fucked up in that Sting match, I thought was quite interesting. Right. He was actually good at it, I thought.
But I think in the world of duty, he should not be.
Oh, he doesn't need to be,
because he's so over and. And like, so his 09 has put him as a face forever as it is. But even before then, he was too over. And again, we talked about, I mean, sure, promo wise, they get lapped by both those teams. But I think connection and charisma from the Hardys, you know, I think New Day has that really strong at a strong level. But I just think the Hardys just have that even beyond. And like, I think they almost took the Rockers formula and and surpass. You know, they're like the evolutionary rockers to me, the Hardys. Just this great babyface team, capable of great matches, and the Hardys just took that template and just like lapped them.
Yeah, I mean, what a different conversation we'd be having if like we had like a if they were doing 12 pay-per-views a year mm-hmm. when the Rockers were there. And we could see, because we just have such a catalog of Hardy matches, right, to come from. And when you look at them, like, you would think, oh, wow, Michaels is way better than Jeff Hardy, and Jannetty's probably way better than Matt Hardy, but you're like, but then when I look at it, it's not even close.
Right.
Like, I Rockers won't contend for number one, for me, anyway.
I'll be curious, because Scott and I on Place Two Podcast are hitting summer of 88 when the Rockers have arrived. So I'm curious to see now as they work into 88, 89 in the coming couple months before, you know, I put my list in, if I catch anything that really stands out for the Rockers. I'm thinking not, because I just don't think I'm going to get far enough with our schedule for anything. I think a lot of the stuff probably comes in 89, but we'll see. I'm sure there's a Brainbusters match coming up soon at some point that could help. But anyway, that's a different team for a different day. So to me, the Hardys, yes, are likely to be my number one. I don't see that changing. Now, if like a team like Revival had come in and tore it up on the main roster and have been given a lot of paper, like maybe they could have been in the conversation. But I just think, at this point, Hardys, Usos, New Day are likely the top three in some order, and the Hardys are very likely to be number one.
Yeah, it's funny. We're probably going to, like, I remember when we did the GWWE singles, our top 20 was nearly identical with like a couple of little pieces moving around, and our top three sound pretty much identical right now. We need more conflict, jockass.
Okay. Well, we may get it here. So let's talk about our second team, which is a one of those teams that you mentioned, like you mentioned earlier, a team that was put together in kind of a division killer. And that is the continuing our brother theme here tonight, inadvertently. And that is the Brothers of Destruction, not to be confused with the Brothers of Discussion, Scott and Glenn Butler. This is the Brothers of Destruction, Undertaker and Kane. And you are obviously on record with many hours of dismantling both men in different ways, both on our GWWE Making the Cut, Made the Cut podcasts and elsewhere.
I made the case for Kane.
Yeah. So what do you think as a team? Like, obviously they're going to make the list. Do you see them as a back half, or can they sniff that top half? I mean, I think the biggest thing they're lacking, obviously, is good matches as a team.
Yeah.
But they obviously are main event level. They had a lot of big time matches, some good matches, some good angles as a team, good presence, look, all that stuff. But I'm not sure what if they have like a great match.
I don't think they have one. Like I'm going to take a quick peek at what I have in terms of that. But I just feel like they have done more damage to the tag division than – I don't want to say than anyone else, because I don't think that's quite true. Because for all of their flaws – as a team and how they could be division killers, they always tended to be put in the ring with other division killers for the most part. Like they fought like Austin and Triple H, you know, they weren't killing. Like I find DX in 09 killing the Legacy is tough to watch. It's like, well, it's an upcoming team and these guys are there. Right. So like, I don't know how much damage they actually did. I have their best match that I've seen so far.
Fully Loaded 98? Or is Backlash 01 better? I feel like that's not that bad, that match.
I have No Way Out 01, where they fight Dundee and Edge and Christian as their best match as a team so far. But I'm missing. Like I have. Oh, wow, I didn't rate that high at all. I have their match against Austin, Triple H ranked pretty low. DDP Cannon's a disaster. Chronic's a disaster. Like, and see, that's the one that, like, it's all those things, right? Like, the Chronic match sucked, but, like, they killed them. You know, like, there's no reason for them to be killing this team.
Right.
DDP Cannon, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, they were just a cancer during that period. And when they've teamed up in the, like, they teamed up in a Survivor Series not too long ago, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Well, it's funny. I was going to mention this. I was going to mention this again, as we mentioned with the Hardys. In a weird way, it's almost at a super elevated level. When they get back together for these sporadic stuff, like they almost feel like they're more main event level than they were as a team back in the – which is funny to say about Undertaker. But when they were teaming in 01 regularly, they – they obviously were main event guys, but it felt different from when they would come together on like a SmackDown in 07 because Teddy Long makes a big match on a special show. You know what I mean? And they would they would team up and have a match. It felt like a big deal. And I don't know, like that part of it was kind of cool. And it almost feels like, again, I think it probably has to do with Kane's elevation as more of a world title guy in by like 06, 07. So I don't know. Do you get that feeling as well too? They almost, maybe it's not new guys to main event jump. Maybe it's that 06 to 17 Hardy jump, right? So they went from like main event level guys in 01 to, it feels like more like a Legends team in 06, 07.
Yeah, maybe. And I have less problems with that.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's, I mean, look, it's really the 01 run that hurts them. Because not only are they, like, killing the division, but they're also not having anything resembling a good match.
Right. And they beat 2015 Survivor Series, they beat Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper.
Right. No one, like, yeah, like, and it's, I mean, that's just kind of the climate of what WWE is now, right?
Right.
Like, there's no way, like, a Legends team is going to lose a match to an up-and-coming team. In any time past 2000, any time past The Rock coming back.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't happen anymore.
No.
I think you're right. Like, their Legends teamwork is okay. It doesn't hurt anyone, I don't think, for the most part.
No, because a lot of it's really sporadic. It would just be like, Taylor makes a match and you're fighting them in a tag. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
But I do like the I do like your point from 01, because they are, they do hurt the division quite a bit. There was no need for them just to destroy Kenny and DDP like that. And, you know, you can't give me the bullshit that Taker was trying to get his revenge for Sarah, because, like, he had done that over and over. Like, we didn't need again there.
She had done that.
Right, yeah, she pins DDP at one point.
She pinned him. And there was no reason for them to be in the tag division, because they were already teaming on a main event level. Like, they were teaming with the rest of the WWF guys against the WCW guys.
Right.
There was no reason to drag the tag titles into this.
No. No. No, there definitely wasn't. And DDP and Kenny were a team that could have used it. Like, put them with the Dudleys or something. You know, or I guess the Dudleys were on their side, but whatever. Put them with the Hardys or Edge and Christian. And you get something a little bit better. And then the Chronic stuff is confounding, because Taker brings him in as a favor, because they're buddies. You know, he's buddies with Bryan Adams or whatever. So they come in, and then that match is just an ugly mess. And I think, I'm guessing Taker's probably been embarrassed, because Chronic comes in and was clearly just not really in shape prepared for that match. So I'm guessing he probably felt a little betrayed, and I'm guessing he just didn't stand up for his boys at all and just let them get shit down to
But I'll say this OVW, for the Chronic match. It sucks, but it's not all Chronic.
No, definitely not. No,
like, it's not like – but, and it's also – it's funny too, because I actually probably buy what you're saying, that like, oh, Chronic sucks and I'm disappointed if I were Undertaker, right? But they were having shit matches with everyone. So it's not like – not like Chronic's the common denominator here. I'm not putting over Chronic, all right? I'm going to rank them ahead of Edge and Christian, obviously, okay? But like, I to throw that only on them feels a little petty. Considering,
it's funny, the internet was such a weird place in like 99, 2000, because I remember Chronic being super over. Like, people really were into them, and I think it was just the kind of the Goldberg push mentality, like they were just killing teams. I also think they actually inadvertently got some APA rub, because they were doing a similar gimmick and they seemed like they were the same, because APA was super over, just murdering guys. So I feel like they were getting some of that bounce as well over in WCW, but then they come here to WWE all of a sudden and it's like, whoa, what was this? And you're right. Taker and Kane do not help in that match at all.
No.
And you wonder, too, how much is Taker realizing kind of halfway through that he things are not going well, and he just starts sandbagging them and said, fuck it. You know. So I don't know how much does it play there as well. But no, they should make the list just due to star power alone. I think some of their stuff in 98 is fine. Like, fully loaded in 98. And then you mentioned the 01 tag team as well.
They're in cahoots.
Right. I mean, I think you kind of inadvertently count that stuff too, even though it's an awful match. At Judgment Day, it was pretty brutal. The three way. Or is that Breakdown? Whatever one has a three way.
It's Breakdown, the three way. But the Judgment Day is also awful.
Right. But that they're wrestling, so I'm not going to count that. But Breakdown, they're basically wrestling as a team.
Right.
Breakdown. So. Yeah, to me that one goes against them. But anyway, I think they'll probably be – I could see them being like in the 70s somewhere. They'll make it. You
know, I broke mine down kind of like – I don't know if I talked about this last time, but I kind of have everybody listed in tiers of 10.
Right.
And I'm looking – right now I have them between 70 and 80, but that actually feels too high. Like when I look at the teams, like I have it 81 and 90. Like, oh, like I don't, do I really want to put them ahead of the U.S. Express? You know, I quite like the U.S. Express. You know, like, do I want to put them ahead of Miz and Mizdow, who are like an awesome comedy team? Like, so I guess we'll kind of see, like, where that pans out. Like, they may be ones that I keep bumping back until they're very near the end.
Yeah, I okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think it's just kind of a wait and see. You're right. And just, it'll be one of those teams for sure that you just say, okay, are they better than this team? No. Are they better than this team? No. And then all of a sudden, we're going to be talking about them at like 98 or something like
yeah.
that. Well, I think it's fair. I mean, they're only in conversation because of the name value of the team. Like, they don't really have much else going on.
Well, like when you said before, you were like, this match counts against them, right? Like, the breakdown match. Like, off the top of your head, what match counts for them?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to rewatch that one you just mentioned from No Way Out 01.
Yeah. But even at that, I have that ranked at like 3 stars, I think. 3.5, maybe.
Right. Yeah. So what do you have the Backlash show one at?
Backlash show, okay, hold on. Back the table match, I have it 3. Backlash show one, I have it 2.25. DDP Cannon, I have 1.5. Chronic, I have 1. See, I wouldn't put Chronic a dud because they're still working hard and like – Right. I know that's probably contrary to what some people think, but
yeah.
we've gone on record talking about this. Like, if like for me, like a zero or a dud is like Undertaker, Big Show, Punjabi Prison.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think I even had that as a dud last time when Scott and I talked about it on the podcast. I probably had it somewhere. Well, we weren't really doing grades then, but I would expect it to be somewhere around the 1 as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, 2.25 means that, like, it's 2.5 is my baseline. Okay, it's fine, but it's boring.
Right.
So 2.25 means there's something wrong. There's starting to have things wrong with it. And I couldn't tell you what those were because I watched maybe like 1.5 years ago. But fuck them. Fuck these brothers. Right. Brothers.
All right, well, we're off to a strong start tonight talking about a lot of brother relationships. Brother, brother, indeed. So why don't we go ahead and take a break, Aaron? I think we've said all we need to say about Undertaker and Kane.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more wrestling in a different, completely different aspect. And then later on tonight, we're going to get into some pop culture stuff as well. So we'll be right back here on No Holds Barred.
I'd have no issue with Undertaker and Kane making love.
And then destroying the house of Jonathan Bill.
Yes. Or fuck Drew.
Whatever one thing that doesn't sell. Just like Don't The Undertaker. One of them sells, one of them doesn't. See, there's a lot of comparisons.
The Undertaker's you, honey. Kane's Dick Vinegar.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Jockass Nation, let me ask you a question.
We're holding no bars.
No, I'm not holding a bar right now.
Mm.
I'm holding a lot of other things, but not a bar. I hate to see you sad. Are you guys all in? JT, are you all in?
I'm all in the house that Jonathan Property built me.
Nice, nice. I'm glad. So this is where it comes from. You bought a house from
I wish.
These fucking brothers. And
I actually wish I did, yes.
You'd probably feel better about it. So this past Saturday, mm-hmm. was the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes spectacular show All In. And I thought it'd be good if we touched on this because it's quite the lightning rod in the internet wrestling community world for many different reasons. Now, right off the bat, I have to ask you, did you watch the show?
I did not.
That's okay. I'm not going to shame you for it.
Okay.
I mean, look, we can talk all day about all the shameful things you've done, but this is not one of them. Mm. Why not? Just not home, not around, didn't care.
Saturday night is all right. What the fuck did I do on Saturday? So we have the rehearsal dinner Friday. Oh, Saturday was my parents. So my parents' birthdays are both this week, and we had them and some other family over. So I was going like nonstop all day. So we had a rehearsal dinner Friday, the wedding Sunday, and then Saturday I grilled some ribs and had to prepare dinner for my parents. So it was a lot going on. So I wasn't even like close to being settled by the time the show started.
Right.
But those are all excuses because I was unlikely to probably order it anyway. And it's just I have so many other things that I do that take time that
you're
it's
so
hard
important.
For me to
You're
work.
So fucking important and busy,
nope,
right?
Nope. So what I was going to say is all these other things I do that take time away from me hanging out with my wife at night that for me to add like another one in on a Saturday night, probably like for something that I know would be entertaining but isn't like a must for me would probably have just caused issues that I didn't need.
Why didn't she just watch it with you?
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't want to cause any additional problems. And then you asked me, well, I could help you watch it between then and now. And I just haven't had time. So
didn't care.
Am I saying I would never watch it? No, definitely not. Like I wouldn't mind checking it out at some point. I have no issue with the concept of it. It was just a tough weekend for me to fit it in.
Look, you just want it to fail.
Oh, I hate them. I hate them all.
You're rolling your eyes.
I can't have more than one thing succeed. There was rumors. Our buddy Rock was trying to get the Cowboy to order it like 4 months ago, and then I never heard anything else about it. So there were rumors that we were going to maybe get together and watch it at some point, but it never happened. So anyway.
You should come up here. It's only a six-hour drive. Then you drive back for your wedding. Get yelled at by your son? It'll be a great day. So I had a buddy who was going to come over and we were going to split it. And then he bailed on me for whatever reason. And then I had a decision to make. Like, am I going to just sit here and watch it by myself? Am I going to pay for it? Because it's 40 US, but it's like 55 bucks Canadian, right? To rent this thing. And so my two sons are kind of into wrestling now. Two of my three sons are kind of into wrestling now. And so I was like, yeah, let's watch it together. So we bought it and it was really cool watching it with them. But more than like anything, like watching with them, I felt almost compelled to support this product. Mm-hmm. Because like I'm very much of the mind, like I'm sure I have a bit of a reputation for being a WWE hater, which I don't think is entirely fair. Like I feel I have criticisms about it, but I don't think by any means I hate it. I just kind of wish it was better at points.
Right.
But I've always been a proponent of like, well, if you – there has to be an alternative. And without supporting the alternative won't exist forever. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy putting money down to support this show. Going into it, I was kind of – I don't know if I was excited about it. I was hoping to watch something completely different. And that's kind of what I got, which was really great. Now, I'll preface right off the bat that I'm not going to be the person who's going to tell you this was the greatest show that I ever saw, or that this is something that's going to change the business forever or anything like that. But I think there's some really interesting things that happened on the show that are worth talking about and that are worth thinking about in terms of like what this product is going forward. So like the first two matches on the show were the first one was Matt Cross against MJW. And mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know who Matt Cross is, he's Son of Havoc from Lucha Underground. Do you watch Lucha Underground?
I watched like the first two seasons. I have not kept up.
Okay, so you've seen Son of Havoc, right?
Yeah.
And I mean it was just kind of a pedestrian match and I kind of was taken away from it. Like what I took away from the match was like, okay, this is an indie match. I kind of see why both these guys haven't really quote unquote made it yet. Mm-hmm. Like Matt Cross is older. I quite like him as Son of Havoc.
Is he not tough enough?
I don't know.
I think he
is. But like the thing with Lucha Underground too is it's so heavily edited.
Right.
Like
you can't.
I'm sure like they could mask a lot of these things. And what I did find watching the show as a whole, just as a sidebar, is there was a bit of a. I don't think the camera work was as good as it usually is for wrestling. Like, I don't know if you feel this way. When you watch wrestling live, like when you go to see like a live show, do you find that it looks slower than it does on TV?
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
Because there's no edits, right? So there's nothing really like pushing it forward. And I found that the editing on the majority of the evening was a little bit slower. So it actually felt like watching the show live, which was cool. That match was fine. And then the next match was Christopher Daniels against Stephen Amell from The Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, Cross was on the – he was on the last Tough Enough, the one with the – I'm sorry, the next to the last one, the one with Austin.
Oh, nice.
He was in that one.
Nice. Stephen Amell, if he were to – I mean, what did you think of him when he was teaming with Neville against Stardust and whoever the hell he was teaming with? Like, he had that showing at SummerSlam a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, he was fine in that match.
He was fine, and he's had a couple matches since, and this was his first match back. And watching him, it's like if he would actually dedicate himself to this, I think he'd be good.
Yeah,
like he looks legit. Like there's nothing really, like he's a step off because his timing's off, but he's good. He's really good. Jerry Lynn was the referee too, which was cool. Mm-hmm. Except he didn't tuck in his shirt, which upset me. Like, I don't know if that stuff upsets you, but he had his shirt untucked. But then at one point, he got into a fight with Christopher Daniels. And he took off the referee shirt and threw it at Christopher Daniels. But he was wearing an undershirt that was tucked in. So if you're tucking in one shirt, why aren't you tucking in the other shirt? It's bothering me. Yeah, so it was just kind of a solid, fun match. And I thought Christopher Daniels carried him really well. And Christopher Daniels also didn't, like, slap his leg a million times in the match, which I hate usually watching Christopher Daniels matches. And then we got a four-way women's match, which between Britt Baker, Chelsea Green, Madison Rayne, and Tessa Blanchard. What do any of these names mean to you?
They all mean something. Do I need to get into what they mean?
Well, I mean, like, I mean, Madison Rayne, you know, primarily, I would imagine, from TNA.
That's, I know, Britt Baker from indie wrestling Twitter, and also know that she dates Adam Cole.
That's right.
Married, right? Yeah. I know Chelsea Green as well from indie wrestling Twitter, and that she's with Zack Ryder, right?
Yeah.
And I know Tessa Blanchard, obviously, quite a bit. So
it's funny. Like, Britt Baker came out to Adam Cole's old ROH music.
Right, yeah, I saw that. So I was following a little bit between our live chat group and Twitter. Like, I caught, like, a lot of kind of what was, you know, the flow of the show and what was going on and the talking points and whatnot. So I was aware of, like, all the results as they were coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, what's her name? Chelsea Green did the broski boot in the corner, too. It's funny, like, I think it was at the Women's Royal Rumble, people were lamenting that, like, oh, they're chanting for Rusev when Lana's out. Like, it diminishes her value. And it's like, as with this one, no one had an issue with it at all. It was just kind of like a wink-wink to the audience.
Of course.
I was also, like, I was writing down what my older son, who's six, was saying about the show. Because I was originally planning to do a written piece, but then we're doing this, so it's probably not going to happen. But like when he saw Chelsea Green, who's basically like in a two-faced attire, he's like, what kind of maniac weddinger is she? She's in like a wedding dress and like
right.
And Tessa Blanchard comes down, and she's basically meets midway, and she starts like – she's hugging her father, Tully Blanchard, and Magnum TA. And I'm just so upset that those two are on speaking terms. Like, I thought that after the feud that they had – we should never see them on television again.
Well, do you just picture that maybe she like talked to them like, you guys have to come out here and be civil tonight, you know, and they came out just to make the daughter happy, you know?
Look, one of you quit, one of you didn't, right? It's all in the past. As the match progressed, Jackson, my son, kept saying they should just all pile on the black-haired girl, which is Tessa Blanchard, because watching her, I think the WWE missed the boat on someone here. Like, she looks like she's as good as Charlotte or Asuka or anybody who's kind of on the main roster right now. The way she moves, the way her character is in this match.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I feel like she's been talked about a lot. It's like on the radar. Like, why haven't they signed her? Like, didn't she do stuff with NXT at one point? Am I mixing her up with someone else? I thought that was her.
She's in the first Mae Young classic.
Right. So I feel like there's always kind of been like a thing, like she was rumored to be signed and hasn't been. Like, I feel like there's been a lot of chatter around that.
Yeah. Like, I don't get it. Like, I, when there's, like, look, I like Alexa Bliss. I think she's good. But, like, this, Tessa Blanchard's way better. Right. Like it just seems like she's. I like Nia Jax. She's fine. She's beautiful. I know we have to say she's beautiful every time she's on TV, but she's beautiful. But like, if Tessa Blanchard was in that place, I think the whole division would be better.
Right.
Like, and she was just killing everyone in this match with big power moves. At one point, she press slammed Chelsea Green out of the ring. To which Jackson exclaimed, "Jesus Christ, the maniac girl got killed." So that was very funny. And it was just a real fun match to the point where there was a couple of near falls where I was disappointed that it was going to be over.
Right.
And then she kicked out and I was happy. Like, and I mean, these guys are doing like crucifix drivers and Canadian destroyers and working hard. And, you know, going in, I was imagining this was going to be the worst match on the show. But for me, it was one of the better ones. I don't know if I'd want them to sign Tessa Blanchard. I think she's wonderful, and I'd like to see more. The next match on the card was one of the, I guess, the most promoted matches, which was Cody Rhodes and Nick Aldis, the former Magnus, for the NWA title. And, I mean, what have you heard about this match so far?
Usually the standard Cody match responses, right? That it was a good match, not a great match. You know, it was solid, the right decision, I believe. I've heard many say. I mean, I can't imagine anyone would be surprised that Cody was going to win the NWA title on the show.
Yeah.
He put it together. He booked it. He organized the whole thing. It's his night. And then the tie between that, you get the tie-ins with Dusty, you know, NWA champion. Like, it all just spoke to him leaving the show with the NWA title. So I didn't see too much complaining about it. But
right.
I think everyone seemed to understand that Aldis would just be a transitional champion to Cody.
Sure.
But it seems like it was the usual standard, you know, very good Cody match, peaking, what, maybe like a 3.5 seems like a real good Cody match from what I see usually out there. So three and three quarters, something like that.
So I'm going to off the bat say Aldis sucks.
Right.
Like, I think, you know, a long time ago, I was talking about this with a bunch of actor friends of mine, that there's people that are good at acting and then there's good actors.
Mm-hmm.
Good at acting, meaning that like you're good at the skills, but you can't put it together.
Right.
Right. And I think Nick Aldis is good at wrestling, but he's not a good pro wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
It looks good. His moves look good, but the matches are just not interesting. And I found that when he was Magnus also, except when he fought Bram, which I quite liked. That being said, I would argue that this is, for me, a 4-star match. And it's not entirely because of the in-ring. I thought the in-ring was fine. The in-ring was probably, like you're saying, right? 3.25 or 3.5. But this match made me feel emotional. Like, right from the start, watching Cody come out and I'll preface, too, I'm not the biggest Cody Rhodes fan. I think he's good. I put him on my GWEB. I think he's kind of a bit unheralded for how good he actually is. But I don't think he has a catalog of great matches or
right.
anything.
Do you think this should have went last, given the finish?
No, because it would have gotten cut.
Well, yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
But assume, no, assume there's no time you know, issues.
But allow me to just say this
okay.
about it.
Yeah.
This is someone actually knowing their place on the card.
Right.
Like, for someone who is the booker, right, this is a guy that understands that he's not as big as the Young Bucks. He's not as big as Okada. He's not as big as Kenny Omega, right? So he's putting himself early in the card. Now, based on what it is, you could make the argument that he could have gone on last. But I think it's good that he didn't. And I liked it. I remember thinking that at the time. But when he comes out, the pop he gets is crazy. And it's this pop of complete gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I mean, he's got this team with him. He's got
DDP.
DDP and Glacier, Tommy Dreamer and his dog. But what I thought was really awesome about this was that, I don't want this to sound cheesy, but like 2 years ago, he left a job he probably could have had for life.
Right.
Right. And for lack of a better word, he went all in on himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he decided, you know what? I'm not satisfied with this. I think I can do better, so I will. And this match and this moment was the culmination of that. All the ass-busting he did on the indies the last 2 years to gain the credibility amongst the indie fans, to gain the credibility of the New Japan people, to gain even – I mean, the guy worked in Impact, for Christ's sake, also, right? To gain all that cred, him coming out at this point was just this – beautiful moment that people were just – people were happy to see him and people were grateful that he did this
mm-hmm.
and did this show and provided this alternative. Now, the match itself, as much as it was kind of slow-paced and whatnot, I would also say that this was also very much his love letter to the NWA. Like, he's not only did he – not only is there the tie-in with him and his father, but, like, he's doing his father's moves. He's doing Goldust moves. He's doing Dusty reversing figure fours. You know, he's doing figure fours on him that, like, Dusty won the title with. The way the pace was with the heel carrying most of it, like, it was just a really old-school feel to the match. And the pop he gets when he won is – I mean, it's as loud as anything, and it's beautiful, and you could tell it was a moment for him, and you could tell it was a culmination for him. And, like, I've seen people be like, oh, what a surprise, a Rhodes put the title on themselves. Well, it's like, it's absolutely the right call for the NWA title. Like, if you just look at an objective moment for this, if you want to build this title up at this point to mean anything, it's much better suited on Cody Rhodes than Nick Aldis,
right.
or anyone else.
Oh,
for that
matter. Sure, yeah.
And he's going to go around and defend that title and bring credibility to it and hopefully pop houses for tons of independent companies along the way. And, I mean, even him putting on the belt and him being emotional about it and Brandi Rhodes being an emotional person about it. And I just thought it was just this beautiful package that worked really well. Not my favorite match on the show, but still really great.
Mm-hmm.
And then next you got the street fight, Joey Janela against Hangman Page, which was just crazy. Like, the finishing sequence was – I mean, it was basically a rite of passage, which is his kind of reverse DDT through a table. And, man, like, just crazy. Like, it was a lot of fun too. And throughout the show, on Being the Elite, which I don't watch, but they had talked about how Hangman Page had murdered Joey Ryan.
Yeah.
Did you know about this angle? So he killed him, right? And which was great because throughout the match, they kept talking about how he killed Joey Ryan without any irony. So at one point, Don Callis is like, don't give him any ideas. He already killed Joey Ryan.
Right.
You know, so it was there was some good comedy in that, too. And then at the end, they're pulling out cursed boots and, like, they're scared about ghosts and using the phone that he killed Joey Ryan with. So it got kind of comical, too. But then Joey Ryan comes out at the end, like, with a parade of penises, like, dancing down the aisle. And Joey Ryan's shtick, if you've never seen it, is this fucking sleazebag,
right.
1970s, I want to say cop. His music is like the 70s cop. But this is what Jackson had to say about it. As soon as he saw him kind of bouncing in the ring. First thing, ew. Second thing, what is he doing? Third, why did he put his undies – why is he pulling down his undies and pouring water in his pants? Third, how is he hurting him with his penis? Fifth, why is he hurting him with his penis? But I thought it was such a cool moment that Joey Ryan got this massive boost, this crazy boost and this pop, and it was just a really fun thing to see.
What are your thoughts on, like, the – I saw, like, some criticism or comment on Twitter around the, you know, if Dirty F.E. or whatever the fuck, Dirty had done this penis thing, like, would have been shit on across the board by everyone.
WWE wouldn't have earned it. Like, WWE throws out Big Dick Johnson for no reason to dance in Vince McMahon. And they do it once and it's fine, then they do it again and again and again until it's not funny anymore, right? This Joey Ryan thing is set up – I mean, look, if you look at this show as like the culmination of the indie world.
Right.
He's been doing this gimmick for 2 years on the indies, never with really much publicity, quote unquote. I mean, he's gotten Twitter shit and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
Then they have the whole storyline on being the Elite where he's dead, you know? So, like, they're paying off something. Now, you can say it was hokey and stupid, and you can not like it, too. That's fine, you know? But, like, it never felt forced. It felt like the logical conclusion of this story, which is insane, but the story was insane, right? And the people in the arena clearly ate it up. So I think these things, it's more about how you do them. Like, WWE would do it with, like, Dean Ambrose leading it, as opposed to Joey Ryan, who is the penis guy.
Right.
And that's where I think it would go wrong. And then the crowd, as they carry Paige out, the crowd all started chanting, rest in penis. Fucking awesome. But then my son started chanting it and has been chanting it for 2 days. But, like, I don't know. Like, he talks about his penis all the time. So he's a six-year-old. That's what it is. So I thought that whole segment was really cool. Then you got Flip Gordon against Jay Lethal, and Jay Lethal's doing the Black Machismo stuff. which, I mean, look, Jay Lethal I love. I think he's great. And I thought his attention to detail with the Black Machismo stuff. I mean, he's going after Brandi Rhodes as if she's Liz. I don't know if you've seen any of this, but like, he's right off the bat, he jumps out of the ring and brings her over to his corner.
Right.
He's like, you stay there. And then she tries to get in the ring to escape, and he scoops her up and puts her on the shoulders, does the finger point. And Leaping Lanny Poffo was there too, Dad, to sell the whole idea too.
Right.
So that was just kind of a fun match. Great, a really great comedy match. And then you get to Cody, Kenny Omega, and Pentagon. And, like, I don't see how you could – you can talk about not liking a certain style, but these guys fucking tore the house down for, like, 17 minutes. And it was 17 minutes of intense, crazy action. And I would say if you watch one match from this show, you should make it that one. Like, okay. It's totally worth your time. Because both – I mean, Pentagon, to me, is – maybe the most underrated guy in the world right now. Like, he's kind of so under the radar. It doesn't help that he was on TNA for the last 6 months. No, and that seems to have a stigma with it. But he's just so wonderful. And Kenny Omega is just on another planet this year. And what I loved about it is watching it, they kept talking about how it was a dream match. Here's the dream match coming. The dream match is here. And it delivered. And it was a nice contrast to the WWE, who like spent the whole better part of the year promoting AJ Styles Nakamura as a dream match, only for it to really fall short of expectations almost every single time. Now, I'm not to shit on those guys. I love those guys, but it never hit the heights that it could have or maybe should have. And these guys talking about how this was a dream match, the commentators, who were great on the evening, they didn't hammer it home every 10 seconds. It's like, oh, here's a dream match. We're going to love watching it. Here it is. There's some subtlety to that, which was really nice. But I can't speak to any more about how great that match was, other than the fact that like I was taking notes all night, and I just stopped. Like, I just stopped taking notes and watched the match because it was so good and so wonderful. And then Jericho shows up as Pentagon and blows the roof off the place, which is awesome. Okada and Marty Scurll come next. And again, if you've watched this Okada match, you've seen – I don't want to say if you've seen one, you've seen them all, but they all have a kind of a similar feel. It was very good to great, went too long, which unfortunately cut the main event, which up until that point was – we saw the match together, which was the Young Bucks and AJ Styles against ACH, Cedric Alexander, and Matt Sydal. And I think we both agreed that night that that's a five-star match, right?
Yeah, yep.
Like, this match was 11 minutes. Apparently it should have gone 20, and I would say that if it had gone 20, it would have surpassed that match. It was that good. Like, moving. And Rey Mysterio, dressed as Wolverine, was so good. And I mean, Rey Mysterio and Kota Ibushi got in the ring together, and the place, without them even touching, completely came unglued.
Right.
So, I mean, top to bottom, I would say it was a great show. Like, for me,
Do you subscribe to the theory that Marty Scurll went long on purpose to fuck with the show? That's been a hot conspiracy out there on the internet.
Why? Like Marty Scurll needs these guys as friends way more than they need him.
Right. Well, the theory is that he's headed to WWE, so he went in as a saboteur.
Yeah, but why sabotage the Young Bucks?
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense. I'm just talking about the theory that I've seen floated.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. If anything, I would blame Okada. Like, because Okada wrestles a certain style of match that always tends – they're almost all that long. You know, so maybe that's it. I don't know. But all said and done, I thought the show was great. Like, I enjoyed this show maybe more than any WWE show I've seen this year. Maybe the Rumble. I liked the Rumble a lot this year. I thought that was a really good show. What I loved about this show, before we talk about the Impact or whatever, the show was 4 hours. I didn't watch the pre-show. I just didn't get it. The show was 4 hours, and not once did it feel long. Versus a four-hour WWE show where by the end, I'm just so fucking tired of watching wrestling. And again, I'm not – there is a comparison to be made there. But what I think is interesting about it is that they went out of their way to make every match feel different and be different. Like, the first match was just a regular indie match. Then you got a celebrity match. Then you got a four-way women's match. Then you got a big-time championship match with Cody Rhodes. Then a hardcore match. Then Omega and Pentagon, which is just this fucking crazy, insane 2010s wrestler work rate match. And then you have the crazy spot fest at the end. So everything felt different. as opposed to watching SummerSlam. And I want to go back and do this when I have more time. The thing I took away from SummerSlam is like every match is the same.
Right.
Every match starts with a lockup. There's an X amount of strikes, X amount of reversals. We have to wait for 1, 2, 3 near falls, and then the fake out at the end, and then the pin. You know, like this card had none of that. Everything was different, and it was a breeze to watch.
So is the crux then of the complaint about WWE shows being too long? That every show is long, or is it just that the variance in the shows isn't enough? Like if All In was every month at 4 hours.
I think it's
with
variance.
A similar roster, do you think like they all continue to be breezy? I'm just trying to, I saw a lot of like the, you know, you're bitching about Dirty being 4 hours, but everyone's cool with All In being 4 hours. And you know, to your point, it's a different type of 4 hours. So I'm trying to determine if is time really the problem, because a lot of the complaint is, oh God, who wants to watch 4 hours? But it's more that it's 4 hours every month, or is it more that it's 4 hours with a product in the way it's presented?
Look, if a good show is 4 hours, it flies by. WrestleMania 19 flies by, right? That's a WWE show. It's 4 hours, right? I would even say WrestleMania 20, for the most part, flies by, and that's even longer.
Yeah, maybe not.
But the thing on a card like that is there's enough variance. Or to take it in a more modern perspective, if you watch New Japan at all, like those shows are 5 hours, and they don't feel long.
Right.
But they also present – I mean, like, you get a strong style match, you get a never match, you get the big main event matches, you get a hate-filled brawl. That's what's missing. It's like, what are the – the matches right now in WWE, I find, never bear out what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
If two guys hate each other, they're not going to lock up. Like, and the match can have a different energy. It's the energy in the matches that seems to be lacking for the most part in WWE right now. As opposed to this one, where, like, if there were people that hated each other, like Paige and Janelle, I guess, kind of hated each other. Like, but it had a different feel.
Right.
And it just – everything felt different. Now, a couple of matches were probably a little longer than they needed to be. I would actually point out the Janelle and Paige matches being a bit too long. I know that's some people's match of the night, but I found it was a little disjointed. But that to me is the difference. I don't think time is the issue. But the problem is that there's more than just – quality and quantity. There's like quality of quantity.
Mm-hmm.
That like that's what's missing. Like you could make every pay-per-view 4 hours, but and there's no excuse not to do it on the WWE roster because they have so much talent.
Ridiculous talent.
Yeah. Like there's no great example. There's no reason for the cruiserweights to be wrestling the same style as the Intercontinental match. Like it's a whole different division. Work a different style. And no one will be bored. I mean, you get the people complaining who complain about everything, right? But
yeah,
it'll
like
be
you.
Fine. Yeah, like me.
So, obviously, there's a lot of arguing out there. We saw some of it and elsewhere around – I don't want to call it a straw man. I don't know. Did you see people rooting against it? Because I feel like that became like a rallying cry straw man that – folks were like actively rooting against All In or I feel like it was the main two camps were people that were real into it or folks like me that like kind of wish them the best but just not gonna go out of my way to watch it or make the time to watch it. Or did you actually see chatter out there like actively hoping it bombed or that people had a bad time and that just saying, you know, oh, just kind of shitting on what it was? Like, I guess I saw some of that after, but I don't know.
Some. You know what it is? I find it's very much like everything else that's polarizing in society today, right? It's like when everyone – not to get political, but when everyone decries like, oh my God, look at the fucking Nazi problem we have right now. Well, there's not actually that many of them. Like, you know, like there's maybe 10,000 in the whole country kind of thing, like, which is nothing. And so like, yeah, I did see some of that chatter, which I thought was fucking stupid.
Right.
And the thing with some of that chatter is it's coming from people who don't even watch the show.
Right.
That are spoiling the show for people who might want to watch it later. Like, which is mind-blowing, right? But it's only a couple people, you know, like, so you can't take that as the majority, you know, like, but it is there and it's weird. Like it's – but that's just a weird thing to begin with. I mean, you get people that are very possessive about who the WWE are and anything else other than it becomes this.
Well, and it's become polarized too. Chad and I talked about this on Monday Night Wars, the last one. I went on my soapbox about Matt Riddle. But he – we talked about this as well with the weird line being drawn, and I think it's been drawn on both sides of like the New Japan kind of group and the Dodi. Like, you know, I think there's a subsect of Dodi fit defenders and fans, and then if folks with New Japan Shana, then they give it the right back. Like we said, oh well, you know, the show's 5 hours, I don't see you complaining now, kind of, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
When I guess my thought is like, who cares? Like, and this cuts both ways. This cuts for those that feel the need to crap on someone that just wants to watch Dodi or likes WWE. Like, who cares? Just let people kind of want to watch what they want to watch, and if it's successful,
sure.
The more successful. Like, there is nobody out there, unless you work for WWE. And even then, that's a very thin argument that benefits by All In doing poorly.
No, no. And any, like, it makes no sense. Because here's the thing. This is my view of it. I think the WWE failing a little bit would actually be good for business. Because hopefully it would force them to become creative once again. Because they have no reason to be creative anymore. And you can tell that, like, you can almost tell that their whole history is almost built around it's going to sound bad, but it's almost built around trying not to, like, getting out of being creative.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, him buying up all the promotions isn't him putting on a better product than the promotions.
Right. The only time you could argue he was super creative was when they were losing. Yes.
Yeah.
When they were about to go out of business.
And then look at how good it was,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, like, I think for me, like, of all my complaints about WWE, what I lament is that I know how good it can be.
Right.
And so the answer why it's not is because it doesn't have to be. And you'll hear that. They don't have to anymore. They have all the subscribers. They have everything. There's no reason for them to be creative anymore. But I don't understand why you wouldn't. But the flip side of that is, why does someone who is creative stop being creative? And, like, as someone who works in a creative field, it's because you're scared. It's because you're scared of losing what you have. But in the WWE's world, that's insane. They have such a – number one, they have a complete monopoly.
Well, I think the difference now is, though, that – like, I think that argument is very strong for a high majority of their stretch of company success. But I feel like now they actually are quite successful. So I could see why more now versus, like, not wanting to be creative or take risks is that, like, this is working in its own way. Now, is it working rating-wise? I don't know. But they're making more money than ever before. The mainstream coverage is bigger than it's ever been before. It's, you know, riding the coattails of geek culture, you know, so it's lumped in. So its coverage and its scope is bigger than ever before.
Sure.
And I do think part of it, and you mentioned it with your own kids and, you know, the Cowboy's nephew has gotten real into wrestling. And it's like, I still think part of it just has to do with, like, I think it's still awesome to kids. You know what I mean? It's still working, right? The magic of wrestling still works. It's just that we're aging out of it, and they're not doing much to keep us there. And I think the times where they're most popular is that cross section of magical for young fans, but really fucking cool for, like, the older fans. And the times we've seen that were in the mid to late 80s with The Rock and wrestling and Hogan blowing up. And then the Attitude Era, where they just hooked in older fans because, like, it was just real cool, and it was just a snapshot of time that can never be replicated.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. I interrupted you though.
I was pretty much done. So I don't think they've had that cross section again. And the only other time where they've been close to being pushed since the Attitude Era, I think you could argue, was their other great creative year, and that was 08, when the ratings had slipped. They weren't making the big money deals yet. TNA was, I don't want to say hot, but probably at their
best.
At their apex, yeah. Like 06, 07, 08 was kind of their biggest point. They were running the monthly pay-per-views. Angle was there. Hardy, you know, like Christian, like, guys were jumping to TNA. So, like, and ROH was picking up steam. So, like, a lot of the perceived competition was starting to pick up. And you know, I think they felt it again probably from New Japan over the last couple of years, and that's why they've been on the signing binge. And I think NXT has become their creative ground, right?
Yeah.
So that's where they're trying things out and putting – I think NXT combined with WWE is what, like, the Attitude Era in Rock and Wrestling. So, like, NXT is for what – they're throwing the bone to the older fans. Here, get the network and watch this and shut up. We're just going to do what we want over here. Like,
yeah,
I think that, that's
shut up.
A big part of it.
But that is their mentality.
Yes.
Just shut up. Like, here's what I want to say about that. You're right that there is some truth in that. Everything you're saying in terms of, like, people age out of it, there's a sweet spot and whatnot. I'll give that all to you, mm-hmm. Okay? But I will also present that they can absolutely have it all.
Right.
They choose not to. Because you can have – because all their success and everything that they're having now has nothing to do with their storylines.
No.
Nothing to do with their writing. It has to do with their infrastructure. It has to do with the fact that it's become – I would say it's become kid-friendly, and that's helped also. Mm-hmm. The PG stuff helps. And I'm not against PG because we have had eras where it's been PG and it's been great, right?
Oh, yeah. The Attitude Era was great in the moment because of the way the world was. It's just not that way anymore. You can't do that anymore. You can be edgy and hardcore, but it's just you're never going to get that time period of the world back in the late 90s where it was on the edge. It was at the very end of, like, you can say and do what you want, and men can hit women, and you can call women bitches, and they were, you know, like, all, like, that whole 70s, 80s mentality, like, it was cresting in the late 90s, and then, boom, it ended. So you can never get back to what the Attitude Era was.
But you don't need to.
Right, exactly. But it worked at that time period because of the way the world was. And I mean, back to your point of that, you don't need to ever do that again.
No, and what you could work on today... just a hypothesis, right? But you work on the fact that what's big now in comparison, UFC is big also.
Right.
UFC is based on competition. Mm-hmm. You play up, if you wanted to, this is one idea, you play up the real sports element to it. You don't say it's real, but you treat it as a real competition. Like, my problem with their storylines is that, number one, I mean, name five storylines from the past 5 years that are awesome. And then go further back and see how quickly you can find them.
Right.
Right. They're on autopilot with their booking. Right. Every single feud is three pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what. It's like when we were watching SummerSlam and AJ got disqualified, we were joking like, oh, man, if only there was a place where they could be caged in.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like it's just autopilot. And it's like, but it doesn't have to be. You could write that. Right. You have like 40 writers.
Right. And it's built to be a world where you can drop in and out, and they show you a million recaps, so you don't have to be there. They've made their product missable,
and they built it around
moments that they can bake into video packages to catch you back up. Like that's really what it's become. So you don't have to watch because the matches, they'll have the same match again probably in 3 weeks' time or even the next week.
Yeah.
And even if you miss it, we're gonna have this video package for you, and nothing of real consequence happens maybe more than once every 6 weeks on the TV. So, and they're a victim of their own quality of wrestling that they have because every show now features, you know, two or three good matches. So that doesn't stand out like it used to. So it's just, like whatever. You can watch it once a month and be fine.
It's all autopilot. And to the point where the commentators are autopilot.
Right.
Like you want to, I don't want to shit on the commentators too much, but you want to ruin wrestling for yourself. All right. If Michael Cole says that's it, he got him, it's over, he's kicking out. He never says it when the actual pin happens. Like everything is just on autopilot. And that's what makes a show like All In stand out.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it stand out because it's different and it seems to be at the very least on the pulse of the audience.
Right.
No one's shitting all over the company's top babyface at All In.
Right. No, and that was one of the biggest positives you saw out there was that they are, whether you like it or not, whether you're a fan of what they were delivering or not, they were booking for a very specific audience and meeting all of the needs that that audience wanted on that night.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, if it becomes a bigger thing, great. If it doesn't, if it's just sporadic, great. Right. Like,
but can you keep doing that is my question. Like, can you deliver that every week? I don't know. You know, if All In was a weekly show with all the hours that he has, like, can you keep, you know, catering to that
no,
fan base?
No, probably can't. But at the very least, hopefully, you use the resources you have in a more creative way.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's honestly what they were always good at. Like, shit on Vince Russo all you want.
Right.
Every show felt a little different, and everybody was always kind of moving forward in a storyline. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, wrestling works best when there's the typical dramatic structure, which is like character achieving objective.
Well, Russo was also the one against SmackDown, right? So, I mean, he was a believer in not having
–
right.
He knew it. Or he just wanted to get paid. Well, what a piece of shit.
Right,
wanted to get paid writing a whole other show.
Right, but he was probably on to something, saying it's too much. You're going to – you know, eventually. And, it is too much, but whatever. Like, it's the era of content creation. Like, that's – there's so many outlets and places, and they just want hours and hours of TV. And so whether you watch 2 hours or all the hours – whatever, they're getting paid the same at this point. So anyway, we went off it all in.
Yeah.
Do you see that becoming a yearly thing, twice a year? Like, what do you think that's going to be?
I don't know. I think it did really well. Like, I mean, it sold out mm-hmm. in – I think what would be interesting is to see them try to keep getting bigger with it.
Right.
Like, okay, try to sell it a 20,000-seat auditorium. Because apparently Pro Wrestling Tees also sold like 500 grand worth of merchandise during mm-hmm. this weekend. Like, I mean, you got to give credit to the podcast people, too, who created this entire kind of carnival to go along with this event, too, right? So I don't know. I don't want to get oversaturated with it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think once a year makes sense. I mean, and it's a good time. Like, they were smart with the time because SummerSlam's done and the fall's generally a slow time in the WWE. I know, like, they talked about this on the SummerSlam Reaction Show, Chris and Devin, which I thought were good points, that this is probably one of the more active fall periods WWE has had in a while with the Saudi show and then the Australia show and the Evolution. Like, there's a lot going on, and Hell in a Cell has been booked pretty well as far as card.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, you know, it's a hectic fall. But normally it's a slow time. So, like, if they made that every year on Labor Day weekend, I think that – and it's true to do it on a long weekend. So I think if they do that every year on Labor Day weekend, it would be good. Like, I think twice a year maybe would be max. You don't want to probably go more than that. But I think yearly makes sense. Now, the crux of it is, like, you know, three guys are running it pretty much, and those three guys could go to the other company at any time, really. So does it die then? Or does someone take the reins? So I guess that's part of it, too. Like, this
It'll
is
die.
All banking on Cody and the Bucks not jumping to WWE, which, you know, Cody may look at this and say, hey, whatever, I peaked, you know.
Well, he did do a speech after where he's like, I don't think I'm going to go there now.
Right. Yeah,
so,
but whatever.
But you never know. Yeah. Like, I mean, look, it's like you don't want to actively wish they don't go there because they'll make money and for their families. But, like, creatively, I'd rather they didn't go there because – every single person they've brought in from these companies, they're never as interesting. Like,
well, I mean, they are maybe an NXT, but once they move on past that, it's rare.
Yeah, but I don't even – yeah, you're right. Maybe. But even then, Nakamura is never as good as he was in Japan, wrestling the same guy. You know, like, it's just never as good. Like,
I think AJ is one of the few, and that's just a testament to him.
Yeah.
And they gave him the leash.
But there is a difference in AJ. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like a killer instinct that's not there anymore. I don't want to say like he's missing it, but just in his matches.
Right.
Like, what I loved about AJ watching him on the Independence is that like when he felt like he needed to end a match, mm-hmm. everything seemed to get a bit faster.
Right.
Everything seemed to get a bit harder.
He was also wrestling less. It was easier to have more urgency. I mean, yeah.
Sure, but that's just storytelling. I don't know if that's WWE thing.
Right.
Like, AJ's kind of had a weird year. Like, in terms, I think it just hasn't delivered as much as I think everyone hoped it would. But it hasn't been bad either.
All right.
Anyway, all in.
Okay, watch it. That's it. All right, we're done talking wrestling for tonight. Why don't we come back and we'll do a little pop culture. We're going to do some bracketology, Aaron, breaking down the final 128 of the greatest 80 song of the history world. Greatest 80 song ever tournament. We are through the pool rounds. 128 are going into a full bracket. Aaron and I are going to break down that bracket for you and go on from there. So we'll be back after this.
You got a job, Miss Cheney, but your husband's heart problem's complicating. So the FCC won't let me be, or let me be me, so let me see. They try to shut me down on MTV, but it feels so empty without me. So come on and dip.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We're back talking greatest song of the 80s tournament, and we're going to do some bracketology, Aaron. So we have the brackets in front of us. This is basically a reveal show for everyone.
Look
well.
At the list.
The list
what
is here.
What do we see? So, 80s bracketology. Will it be rock and roll or Take on Me?
Not country.
No, they all went out.
All right, so we're down to 128 songs through the pool round, and those have all been bracketed by – tell me how.
Well, basically, what we did was we took the percentage of votes they got each round, mm-hmm. for round one and round two, added those together, and then based on that number, seeded them one to 128.
Right.
And so there are four regions. There's the King of Pop region, the So Much Hair region, the Synth Jungle region – and the wolves and tigers and seagulls and something or other region.
And just to clarify, we didn't put songs in the region like all hairy people are not.
No. Like
it's just the name of the region because they're iconic 80s things.
Yeah. No. Well, what happened was we looked at the regions were put like there. So like the seeds, like one was in the first one and the region, and two is in the second region, three was in the third region, four was in the fourth region, so on so forth, right? Yeah. So once it all got filled in, seated 1 to 128, we kind of looked at who was in it and based the name of the region on that.
Beautiful. All right, so what we're going to do tonight is go through the round of 128 and make our picks for each one. And that will be your bracketology for the night. So these are the brackets that are going to begin to be posted on Tuesday. How many per day are going out, Aaron?
Oh, we're doing 8 matchups per day.
Okay, and that's all in one post.
One post, yeah. And so it takes 2 days to get through one region because there's 16 matchups in each region, 32 songs in each region.
Yep, perfect.
So the first region is the King of Pop region.
Hmm.
And the King of Pop region holds the number one seed going into this round.
Okay.
Did you check what it was?
Is that Take on Me?
It is Take on Me, which I was surprised. I was surprised that was the number one seed. Mm-hmm. I was happy. I was tired of Guns N' Roses being number one. Take on Me in the first round takes on the last place song, which is Heart and Soul by Huey Lewis and the News.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we thinking here?
Easy. Yes, easy.
Walk for
Take on Me. I don't think we need to go even beyond that. I think Take on Me wins this one with ease.
Yeah. So then the next bracket right underneath that's going to face Take on Me, hopefully, is a battle of some pretty powerful women.
A lot of love.
I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts and Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I mean, look, if they were fighting, Joan Jett has the Blackhearts.
Yes. I'm not a Blackheart.
Enough!
So this one is a preview of every other one to come, that they're all a lot of difficult ones.
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
Do you want the more iconic? Like, for me, it's like, do you pick the more iconic song?
Right.
Or do you pick maybe the better song?
So which is which, do you?
I think the iconic one is I Love Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
And I think the better song is probably Love is a Battlefield. But it's close. Like, this was seed 64 and 65.
Right. So
they're actually the ones that are closest.
Right? So I would, with our voting demographic, I would assume I Love Rock and Roll is going to advance.
I think so, too. Okay. Because a lot of good songs like Love is a Battlefield have gone out very early. The next bracket, we'll be talking about this all night long. Mm. Lionel Richie going against High Love from Steve Winwood.
See, this one's another – like. I think on paper it's not that tough. I think All Night Long is going to romp it. But I do think it's a tougher it's not going to look as tough as it is, I guess what I'm trying to say. Because I think All Night Long is going to beat it pretty good. But I think it should be closer than it's going to end up being. Because Higher Love is a really good song. And it probably deserves a better fate than where it's going to go out here. But I don't see how Lionel can go down here at this point.
Yeah, no. I think All Night Long is going to take
it. It's going to end probably next, because this next one's brutal.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It depends. Like, I have a
different view. You're right.
So the next one is 1999 by Prince and Kiss on My List by Holland Oates. I'm not a big Holland Oates guy. So, like, the fact that so many of their songs got through is a little puzzling to me.
Yeah.
But that just means I'm not on the pulse, right?
Yacht Rock Revolution.
Yeah, right. You're pushing this agenda, all right? You tried 2 years ago with Juicy.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is actually a tough one because my instinct says 1999.
Right.
But
I don't think that's Prince's best song. I'm going Kiss on My List. I think it's pretty iconic. I think there's a lot of love for Hall & Oates right now. They're hot. And it's also great in She's Out of My League, the movie with Jay Baruchel.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
No.
Okay.
I watched the gross ones. You watched the romantic comedy.
That's right. It's big in that one. Anyway, there's a Hall & Oates tribute band as part of the gimmick of the movie. So, and
okay,
that's like one of the big songs they play. So whatever, I picked that, and I think that is a huge challenge for All Night Long to overtake the power of Hall & Oates.
Like, maybe I'm just underestimating Hall & Oates, but I feel All Night Long trouncing it. But okay,
how about
I'm
Prince?
Wrong.
If Prince wins, would you see it trouncing that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's Prince's best song that's left.
Okay.
In fact, I don't even really like the song that much. It's fine, but. Next bracket, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Def Leppard.
Great Boneheads Wing Sauce.
And West End Girls. Is that also a Boneheads Wing Sauce?
It is not. I'll have to suggest it. There's quite a few in here. Right? Well, at least in the full field, there were a lot. This to me is an easy one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Pour Some Sugar on Me probably got some legs.
Yeah.
Probably going to go a little further. And then right up, the winner of that one faces either With or Without You by U2 or The Safety Dance.
I mean, U2 probably wins. I'm on record as not being a big U2 fan. Safety Dance is pretty iconic, but no, I think U2 wins this. And then they're coming hot off the Americans finale. I was in there, so.
I'm going to jump on, the bandwagon of Montreal's own Safety Dance. See what happens.
All right.
Next bracket, Come on Eileen, Dexy's Midnight Runners. Against Big Time by Peter Gabriel, and we need to get Big Time out of the fucking tournament.
Okay? Yeah, you're not a fan?
It's fine, but it's just because of WrestleMania 22.
Hi there.
I'm on my way.
I think it's actually a good encapsulation of the 80s, like if you listen to the lyrics. Like, I think it's, like, it talks a lot about the excess and what the 80s meant. So, I mean, in a way, it's fitting that it's advancing on. But I do agree that WrestleMania 22 Wave is carrying it. And yeah. Come On Eileen is a top 80s beat. So I would anticipate that wins fairly easily.
Yeah, crazy video for Come On Eileen, too. Mm-hmm. Give it some credit. They will face the winner of Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams or It's the End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M.
I'm calling the upset on this one. I think R.E.M. is going to win. Summer 69 is okay. I don't know.
I don't really love either song.
Yeah.
Like, In the End of the World, Know It won their group in round one, but it was a weak group. So,
I think they're both overplayed as part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'll call the upset for R.E.M.
It's 2018.
By the way, are you writing down our picks so we know if we win, if we're right or not?
No. Do you want me to?
Yeah, of course.
Usually, you're good at that stuff. I'm
off tonight. It's a holiday here.
Okay, hold on. I'll write it. Hold on. So we said Take On Me for the first one.
Yep. I love rock and roll. I don't know if you should put it in this as official spreadsheet. You may want to put it like on another column, but okay.
Fuck it. I'm putting it in here. All night long.
Later, you should copy it over there.
We're kind of torn on this one.
Kiss on My List.
No, I'm going to put Torn by Natalie Imbruglia. Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yeah.
Oh, Pour will do. We're torn on this one, too. Natalie Imbruglia.
We got to make picks. Let's just alternate. I'll get the first one. You get the second one. We'll go back and forth.
Okay. You got Kiss. Yeah. I've got Safety.
Okay. Eileen.
Okay. Eileen coming on her. And then we got End of the World.
Yeah. And then we got Beat It taking on Holy.
Yeah. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Beat It by Michael Jackson. Hold Me Now. To me, Hold Me Now is a, I don't know, it's not going to win, put Beat It in, but it's a catchy little tune that I think gets overlooked, and I'm happy to see it's made it this far, because it's a good song.
Hold Me Now.
Plus, it's got more brothers, the Thompson twins.
Yeah,
it's another
great.
Twin brothers.
Are they fucking too and not creating abominations?
Who do you think he's holding?
Ooh. I was surprised that Beat It got more votes than Thriller.
Yeah.
I thought Thriller would be the Michael Jackson song that kind of like trounced this, but I think Beat It is the one now.
Mm-hmm.
So next up, Jenny 8675309, Tommy Two Tone, Rock the Casbah.
Another tough one, but Jenny always wins for me, so I'll go with that.
I'll give it to you. I was gonna say I think Rock the Casbah is gonna win. But
I just think Jenny's more iconic.
I can see it. I'm not going to argue it.
That's what I'm always going to pick.
Don't Stop Believin' versus Everybody Have Fun Tonight.
I wish Don't Stop Believin' had a better matchup here. A tougher matchup because I would have picked against it. But I am so burnt out on that fucking song. But I don't think Everybody Have Fun Tonight's nearly good enough to even troll to say it would beat it. So,
Going into this tournament, I thought Don't Stop Believing was like a sneaky favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it coming out of this group.
No.
The group, the songs around it are just way too strong.
I think the next song has a shot to beat it. So go ahead.
Free Fallin'?
Yeah.
Or Smooth Criminal?
Free Fallin'. I think Free Fallin's going to beat Smooth Criminal. And I think it has a shot to beat Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah, and then it'll go out next round.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that's a hell of a run if it gets that far.
Yeah. That's a big song. Mm-hmm. That's a song that like really like I remember my dad buying the CD at the time.
Right.
Like it's something that kind of like crossed a bunch of generations.
Mm-hmm.
Next bracket is the aforementioned Thriller versus Always Something There to Remind Me.
I'm going Thriller.
Yeah, Thriller. I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute.
Yeah.
Another one, Bites the Dust versus Should I Stay or Should I Go?
I'm going to go with the Clash right in the Stranger Things wave.
That might happen. Another One Bites the Dust should win, though.
Yeah.
Much better song.
Should the song stay or go?
It should stay. I'm going to write Another One Bites the Dust since you got the last one.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, this is a fun matchup. This
yes.
One. Jesse's Girl versus The Warrior.
Yes. Warrior riding the glow train, but yeah. I don't think that glow train's big enough. I think Jesse's Girl wins this, but it's a good showing for Warrior to make it here.
What's a better song, Jesse's Girl or Eat Your Heart Out, Rick Springfield?
Eat Your Heart Out, Rick Springfield, easily.
No shit, right? Okay, and then the final bracket of the King of Pop region, to me, one of the most disinteresting ones is White Wedding by Billy Idol against Tom Sawyer by Rush.
I mean, I like Tom Sawyer better, but I'd be shocked if White Wedding
I think White Wedding's going to win, yeah. So quickly.
By the way, these should be reversed, just so you know. So I don't think we should do the next round because you have these not in the right order.
What do you mean?
Like the next highest after one is eight in this bracket. So eight should be at the bottom because eight and one should not meet until the end.
They can't. If you look at it, you can't. They can't. They can't.
They can't what?
They can't meet until the end. If you look at it, they can't.
Okay. So you just have it reversed. I get you.
Yeah.
Okay. So 8-1-12. Okay. So 57 is the next shittiest. Okay. We're good. Okay. Do you want to do the next round or no?
Absolutely. But just quickly. Okay. Very quickly. Who's coming out of this?
That's what I meant. Do you want to go through these quick?
Oh, no. I want who's winning the pool.
I take on me, most likely. And then my next pick, I think, would be Jesse's girl. And then Don't Stop Believing.
Fuck. I think Beat It takes it.
Oh, I forgot about Beat It and Thriller. Shit. Those are the five.
You notice Michael Jackson. What I like is that, and it's totally random, but right. The Michael Jackson one, they're all going to eat themselves.
Right.
Because they're all in the same bracket. So, like, you're not going to get an all Michael Jackson final or anything.
Right. No, you're only going to get one coming out of here if it even survives.
Yeah, I think Beat It takes it, but, you know, I thought okay. Don't Stop Believing was going to maybe win the whole thing.
I hope Don't Stop Believing loses to Free Fallin'.
Oh, you got to let it go because it's a really great song.
I don't think. I've stopped believing in that song.
Long ago. Suck,
all right, let's get to the next region.
This is the So Much Hair region, and the first matchup is one of the people you thought would take it all off the top, the second overall seed. Take a love to drag me away from you. My favorite part about Africa by Toto is that he uses a simile of a mountain to describe another mountain.
Mm.
As sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus.
It's kind of like Shakira using mountains to describe her tits.
Yes. It's nowhere near the same thing. But Africa's going against... If I was with Shakira right now, I'd tell her to listen to her Heart by Roxette.
Mm. I tell those hips don't fucking lie.
No, they don't fucking lie. I told a buddy of mine that Listen to Your Heart made it into this round, and he lived through the 80s, was in a band in the 80s, and he was very upset.
Belligerent?
Oh, he was like I told him like Crazy Train didn't make it, and he's like, fuck off. Like he's lost all faith in anything. But Africa's winning this one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. The next one, and again, another weird little interesting thing. Right. Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles versus Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles.
Yes, very similar. Yeah. I think Walk Like an Egyptian. No. I take
video,
it back. Yeah. It's gonna win. Just on the MTV thing alone, it'll get wrecked by Africa, though. That's my prediction.
Oh yeah, it will. It will. Then Under Pressure, Queen and David Bowie, both of our pick for a very good song that probably won't win, versus Owner of a Lonely Heart.
I think Under Pressure wins. The
Under Pressure, yeah. Yeah. And then another really interesting matchup right away. Final Countdown, Europe against Whip It by Devo.
I think Final Countdown. I think it's just bigger with our brand. And Whip It's all right. Like, it's iconic, but it's not really that good of a song.
There was a video on YouTube for a very long time which someone had cut the scourging scene from The Passion of the Christ, but they had soundtracked it with Whip It. It was the most perversely entertaining thing I've ever watched.
And Whip It was carried by the Cool Whip commercials that were used it or whatever the fuck was it.
Sure.
Yeah, so whatever.
Yeah. Next bracket, In the Air Tonight versus We Built This City by Starship.
Yeah, Collins.
Yeah, Collins. Funny thing, a few years ago, Rolling Stone named the worst song of all time, maybe about 10 years ago, and the pick for worst song was We Built This City.
And here it is.
In the round of 128. Yes. So there was like 400 songs.
What does Rolling Stone know about music? Fuck them.
Yeah. Place to Be Nation's the authority. Did Rolling Stone do a tournament?
Definitely not. They just chose.
Walking on Sunshine, Katrina and the Waves versus Raspberry Beret.
This is the Prince song that I think will go on a run, and I'm picking Raspberry Beret.
Ooh, I'll give it to you. I think Katrina might sneak it out, but it's close.
I think Prince is... again, pretty big with a lot of our listeners and readers. And I would just be surprised. Walking Sunshine is like almost too poppy. I don't know. I don't see it. Unless you get the Dr. Sir version we used in the Christmas play this past year. That's
next one. Down Under, Men at Work, Wild Thing, Tone Loc.
I do like the Wild Thing, but I think Down Under is.
Yeah, we got to support Stacey, yeah. Right? Like, yes. Important. Like, how many songs talk about her nation's cultural heritage of Vegemite and right. So on and so on? You know what's crazy? Wild Thing by Tone Loc beat out Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Good.
Fuck no, that's awful.
Should beat that.
We're not going to take it. Twisted Sister, Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
This is a hard one. I think Twisted Sister wins. I think I will be voting for Queen on this one, though.
You know what? That video is so important and so interesting that I think Twisted Sister takes this. And I think Twisted Sister goes on a little bit of a run.
Okay.
To me, this is the bracket where some of the upsets, I think, could happen more than the other ones.
Really? I feel like it's been the opposite. You mean later.
Later.
I'll say, because the ones we're going through now, I feel, have been more layups than the last ones.
Yeah, they feel obvious. Like this next one.
Yeah.
Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi, I Melt With You.
Yeah.
Modern English.
Not close.
Yeah, Living on a Prayer is going to trounce it, I think.
Jovi goes down next, though.
I don't know. I mean, Careless Whisper against You Give Love a Bad Name.
Careless Whisper is completely being at least half carried by El Giante, I think. Ah. I think some of the memories of that, anyway. And it's a really good song, but I think it's a better song. I'd go Careless Whisper. I think it's going to win. If we're going with what's going to win, I think it's going to win.
Fuck that. I hate you. I hate Giante. I hate all of it. Born in the USA versus Out of Touch.
Born in the USA. This is not the best. There's better Hall & Oates songs. I'm actually surprised that one made it. I'm thinking that made it because it's Hall & Oates and not because of the song.
Maybe. Rebel Yell versus Don't You Want Me. For me, Rebel Yell.
Yeah, I think so. I'm actually impressed Don't You Want Me made it this far. I do like the song.
Rebel Don't You Want Me is the one that beat out Crazy Train.
That's a little crazy.
And it felt wrong looking at it. Billie Jean versus Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
DeBarge, but yes, Billie Jean.
The one Michael Jackson song that's not in the bracket with the others. Sweet Dreams Are Made of These versus Here I Go Again.
Upset.
Here I go again. Yeah. And I think Here I Go Again might upset Billie Jean.
Oh, you think so? Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's got enough juice. Like, if you watch that video enough, you fall in love with that woman. So, it is what it is. Like a Prayer, Working for the Weekend.
Madonna.
Yeah. And then the final bracket.
Upset.
Nah, I can't. I don't think so.
Back in Black versus Keep on Loving You by REO Speedwagon.
I'm going to vote for Keep on Loving You.
Me too.
I'd rather it wins, but I don't think so. Okay. Not with our group. Because our group is the group that made Enter Sandman the number one song. That made
True.
Everlong the runner-up.
Okay, we'll see.
So, who's coming out of this one?
I've said Africa all along, so I'm going to go with that. And then my next little group is like kind of the potential ones that could just heat up and go crazy, like a Raspberry Beret, like an Under Pressure or a Final Countdown. Living on a Prayer versus Like a Prayer would be a cool
but, semifinal.
I think Living on a Prayer probably has a shot as well.
That's who I'm picking. And I'm picking Under Pressure to upset Africa.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I think Africa
comes out of this.
You don't think Africa? Or you do?
I do think Africa wins.
Oh, okay. This time for Africa, hopefully. Hamanamana, hey. So now we are in the synth jungle. And the first bracket is Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses versus Mad World, Tears for Fears.
Easy.
Yeah, no shit. We don't even need to say it. You know who it is. You Spin Me Right Round.
Easy.
Dead or Alive, Manic Monday, the Bangles.
Easy.
I don't think that's easy.
Oh, I think so. I think You Spin Me Right Round wins.
Yeah, I think it probably wins, but I don't think it's easy. Time after time, the heat is on.
Another tough one. The heat is on is real good, but I don't think it has legs. I think time after time is more iconic, so I think that wins.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. Everybody Wants to Rule the World versus Electric Avenue.
I think there could be a sniff of an upset here, but I'll go with Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
I
think Electric Avenue makes it a little closer than you would think.
I think Electric Avenue will suffer from the fact that I think people tend to see it as a 70s song.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Don't You Forget About Me, Simple Minds, Sunglasses at Night.
See, I wish Sunglasses at Night was up against something else.
Yeah.
Maybe make a run, but there's no way.
No.
Simple Minds might be – it's tough because Guns N' Roses is with them, but
yeah,
that's another one that could maybe sneak.
Yeah. Out. Well, yeah, it could win the whole – I think it could win this.
Actually, you know what? It may get fucked because it depends how big the CM Punk fan base wants to take this next song. it could lose. It could lose to the next round to this.
To Cult of Personality, who can it be now?
Yeah. I think Cult of Personality is going to win that. And it sadly – don't you forget about me is in a tough spot. They would have been better off being lower down away from Cult of Personality because that could ride the punk wave for a bit.
No, I think it'll beat Cult of Personality because there's a lot of punk haters.
So.
They demand an explanation why he left. And
they're
not satisfied.
He's going to be pumping those votes in.
Yeah, with the two-hour podcast he gave him. All right, Addicted to Love, Robert Palmer, Relax. I don't want to vote against Robert Palmer because he surprisingly did so well in the first round.
Right. But I think Relax is the more well-known... All right, I'll go Robert Palmer. I don't think he loses, but it's a sneaky one. This one wouldn't shock me if I'm wrong.
Now this next one is tough.
Yeah,
Like a Virgin versus Footloose.
I mean, Like a Virgin should probably win. I'm gonna say Footloose wins though.
I'm gonna say Footloose wins too. Yeah. I like the thinking there.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where you're voting and you're gonna assume Madonna has other stuff, and you know you like Footloose enough to make that
and
the
it's
one.
It's not your favorite Madonna song,
right?
Of the Madonna songs left, it's maybe the worst one.
Right.
Like a Prayer is better, Materials Girl is better. Next one, Power of Love, Huey Lewis in the News, True, Spanna Du Ballet.
I'll go Huey, but again, I think this one could be a little tight.
Yeah. Huey.
True didn't. True was one of those that surprised me, how on the edge of their pool they were.
Yeah.
I thought that would be one that easily...
It goes to show, Ed, everybody has a few of those songs that, were so important and prevalent to you that, you imagine that everyone else feels the same way, but they don't quite.
I just assume, any song in The Wedding Singer is going to be...
Right.
Up there, because it's such an iconic 80s genre movie that, everyone has seen. So, I don't know. I always just kind of assume, that's why I think You Spin Me Right Round is going to win as well. I just feel like every song tied in to Wedding Singer has a good shot.
Right. I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston. Every rose has its thorn, Poison.
Whitney should win. It's probably the most iconic wedding dancing song that there is out there right now. I think Poison is going to win just based on the demographics.
I think there's a backlash against a song like Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Okay, good. Let's go with Whitney then. It should win. Whitney should win.
Yeah, because it's a ballad.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of ballads, this is the Prince song I think is going to make a run, which is Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Going against Money for Nothing, Dire Straits.
Yeah, I think that's a romp. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that this one maybe romps a while. And again, I love this next
one. Well, I don't know, because the next one is tough.
Yeah, but I think it'll be... men hate women.
Yeah, that's true.
We hate them, right? We don't want them to succeed.
We do have some women voting,
though. Patriarchy, we're holding them down. Right? Girls just want to have fun going against Material Girl. What a great matchup.
That is a tough one.
Yeah. I'm going to err on Girls.
Me too. It's a tough blow for Madonna then, because I mean, if you're assuming she loses here and Footloose, are those dropping the same day? Are they in the same?
No, they're not.
So I'm curious. I didn't know if one would affect the other as you're looking at both of them, you know?
Right, you're like, oh, I want one Madonna song to go through.
So, wow, it'd be pretty big upset if her two songs here go down in the round of 128. That'd be shocking.
Well, you know, it's funny. When we talked last, a lot of her songs went through. About half of them got knocked out.
Right.
So, like, it's funny because remember I was asking you, too, like, who do you think made it? And you'd kind of left her out of your mind.
Right.
I think people forget about Madonna and how important she was. But also, I don't think her songs have the juice to contend for the win. Yeah.
But still, I mean, you'd be surprised. If someone told you, you know, what 64 songs are left and one Madonna song of the 64, like, I think when you first heard that, you'd probably be a little shocked.
Yes. Yes. And but what song would you guess it was?
I think Like a Virgin.
I said I'd go Like a Prayer, probably.
Yeah.
She liked to write about likes.
Hmm.
Jump, Van Halen. Hurts So Good, John Mellencamp.
You know, I never want to hear Jump again. I'm going to say that. Hope that wins.
You know, Jump was the song when I in the late 80s that they would use to bring out the Expos in Montreal when they played baseball.
Okay.
Makes me like all those Expos. Yeah, it was really cool. Tainted Love, Soft Cell, Maneater, Hall and Oates.
Oh, here she goes into the next round.
Yeah, I think it's going to win. I don't want it to win. I like Tainted Love a lot more, but whatever. Every Breath You Take, Jack and Diane.
Jack and Diane's had a good run, but I think...
It's not losing its lease. Yeah. One of my favorite songs... about 10 years ago, I used to do a karate. I used to do a karate. I used to do a karaoke. And I would stare down a man in the audience and sing right into his soul. Last matchup, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, Dancing in the Dark.
Wake Me Up Before You're Upset, Loss.
Yeah, Dancing in the Dark, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think that's that much of an upset. I just think Dancing in the Dark is probably just against harder opponents. Because, like... people are going to look at Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go as like that cheesy 80s song, right?
Oh, I agree. And I think my hot take is that that's Bruce's best song.
I like Thunder Road the best.
Is it better than Thunder Island by Jay Ferguson, though?
Yes.
Down in Thunder Island. All right, what's your pick here?
Ooh, this is a hard one. This is, to me, the...
I'd be shocked if Guns N' Roses doesn't advance, but Don't You Forget About Me is my sleeper.
I go Purple Rain and Jump as my sleepers. Mm. I think it's possible. But I think Guns N' Roses probably takes it.
Yeah.
And of the Guns N' Roses songs, this is the one I'd most like to go through. Right. The other ones I really don't care for that much. All right. Last one in the Wolves and Tigers and Seagulls and Doves and Children. That's what it is. Sweet Child of Mine, Do They Know It's Christmas?
Band-Aid should win this, but... No,
it won't.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses will win there.
Yeah, the number one seed of the first round. Sledgehammer versus Need You Tonight.
Gabriel.
Yeah.
Are you okay with this Gabriel song?
Yeah, I don't dislike Big Time either.
You don't think it's Claudio Castagnelli song that's why it's not going.
Oh, you're reaching into the vaults.
Totally. I don't know shit about indies, man.
I know, dude. You didn't even buy All Out. Fucking sell out. Total Eclipse of the Heart, Bonnie Tyler, Burning Down the House, Talking Heads.
Bonnie.
Yeah. Eclipse. Love Shack, Heart of Rock and Roll.
Covers that too.
Pardon me?
So the movie Old School helps carry that as well.
Oh, but there's no cursing in this one.
Turn around. Love Shack.
Yeah.
Baby.
Hungry Like the Wolf, Obsession. Ugh.
Tough one.
It's Wolf, though. Wolf's going to take it.
Yeah, it's going to win. But yeah. Obsession, you never know. If you get enough Sound Ace Main Event fans.
see what the wrestling contingency does.
This is a true test of that.
You Shook Me All Night Long, In Your Eyes.
AC.
DC. Yeah.
AC Juicy.
Danger Zone, I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Loggins.
Yeah, I know. Iran.
Upset.
Yeah, I Want to Know What Love Is takes it, right?
Yes.
Okay, Eye of the Tiger, Cruel Summer.
Easy.
Yeah, come on. Faith. Oh, this is hard. Faith, Karma Chameleon.
I think Faith wins this one.
Yeah, I think so too, but that's going to be very close.
Yeah.
When Doves Cry, Broken Wings.
I like Broken Wings quite
Me
a bit,
too.
But...
I like the upset there.
Oh, do you? Okay, you think Prince loses. Oh, so you're going. You think it's going to be a big Prince backlash in this one, huh?
I think Prince got the sympathy vote from dying. And
I think Broken Wings, didn't that struggle?
I
feel like that struggled in the pool rounds. Like, I remember looking and thinking, it's not going to win a couple times.
It feels like it's against the weakest Prince song.
Yeah, I still think Prince wins, honestly. I'm sorry. I just if it had performed better in the pool rounds, I'd feel a little bit better, but I feel like every time I looked, it was always like on the precipice of not making it in.
Look, you don't have to be sorry. Okay? You don't need to be sorry.
Sorry.
You're going to be sorry when fucking Broken Wings wins the whole tournament. Shout Tears for Fears if this is it. Huey Lewis in the news.
There's a lot of anger out there, so probably shout, but if this is it, it's a much superior song in my eyes.
Shout was a more famous song, though, yeah, I think.
I know.
Paradise City, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Paradise City.
If there's going to be like a backlash vote, it's Never Gonna Give You Up, but I think Paradise City.
Right. Yeah. Astley, like, bad draw. He could have maybe made a run if he caught like a weak stretch.
Sure. The Boys of Summer, Don Henley, Don't Dream It's Over.
I do like Don't Dream It's Over, but I think Boys of Summer Boys is of too Summer. Iconic. Huh?
Yeah. Ghostbusters versus Rock Me Amadeus.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And then.
Shame. And then Take My Breath Away versus Panama.
Yeah, Take My Breath Away.
Which is sad because Panama is fucking awesome.
All right. So out of this one, I think this is the first time I'm not picking the one. I do not think Sweet Child of Mine makes it out of here. I am going with one of two songs. Eye of the Tiger or Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think it's Eye of the Tiger.
I think Ghostbusters has a legit shot because I think it could ease. It's going to run into trouble against Paradise City. That's going to be the – if it gets by that, I don't think anything in that next – well, then it would hit Tiger, right? So it's going to have to earn it. I mean
– I think it's going to run into trouble against Take My Breath Away.
Oh, you think
like
so?
Yeah, because I think people will associate that with like other romantic moments.
Yeah, but I think Ghostbusters is – the song and the movie are both so iconic, especially with the profile of our voters that – I think it at least makes it – I think it easily gets – I think it easily gets by Take My Breath Away, and then I think it has some trouble with Paradise City. But
yeah.
And then it's against Eye of the Tiger. That top half really is set up. Like, it's too bad Eye of the Tiger wasn't up one more, right? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, because I think Sweet Child of Mine is right for an upset, but there's really not a ton here I think that could take it down.
Danger Zone could take it down.
Yeah, and even maybe Foreigner.
Or Hungry Like the Wolf. Hmm. Hungry Like the Wolf did really well. People like that song. So I'm with you. I think Eye of the Tiger takes it. And that means the winner of this would face the winner of the first one.
Right.
So you're looking at like Eye of the Tiger versus Take On Me or Beat It.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
Okay.
I think it's, yeah.
Well, be sure to vote. It's starting on Tuesday, 8 a day. So get your votes in. Hopefully you enjoyed the bracketology breakdown. Before we get to our celebratory moment of the night, Aaron, anything you want to plug?
This Wednesday, there will be another edition of the Place to Be Network. The hell's it called? The Place to Be Nation Excellent Network Adventure.
Okay, excellent.
It'll be on Thursday, excuse me. We'll be digging into Clash of the Champions 9,
okay,
which is the famous Ric Flair, Terry Funk extravaganza. And at some point, we're going
to
do Seinfeld, yes?
Yeah, I think so. Every it's been back in my mind lately. Like, I'm like, yeah. Oh, I got to do that. It's just been a heck of a couple weeks.
We just got to finish it.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Yeah. All right, so yeah, check that out. I'm happy to see the Excellent Adventure back. It's been fun. The first one was real good, so nice work in there. Scott and I had WrestleFest 88 with Steve Riddle. That was last Monday. That's on the PlayStation Wrestling feed. Chad and I did a new Wrestling Warzone as well on the PlayStation Wrestling feed last week, so check those two out. And I will point you to the PlayStation Pop feed, where last week on Talkin' Pop with Jenny and Tim, we're joined by myself, Greg Phillips, and Scott Criscolo. We looked at Beverly Hills 90210, one of my favorite pods I've done because I've been wanting to do that forever since I've started podcasting. So please check that out. I'm sure we'll be back with a second part of that because we left so much on the table to talk about. But peep those, sign up for all our feeds, and of course, do vote in the 80s tournament out each and every week. All right. Oh, and also a new weekly wrestling snapshot looking at WDTV. Jenny Smith and Brian Baylish are tackling that. So they are just doing a real snapshot. It's not a recap. It's not a breakdown. It's just kind of what worked, what didn't work, match of the week for across the four big shows, 205 Live, NXT, Raw, and SmackDown. So
yeah,
I thought the first one was good. Check it out.
Basically, like the thing that was created on the website 3 years ago called Four Corners.
Yes, exactly.
Just done better.
Yes. Smarter, really.
Really. The person who did it before, the fucking fool. Just one thing about the music tournament. I just want to thank everybody who's been voting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, like, the turnout has been awesome. And, like, this is the kind of project that lives and dies by participation. So if you have taken the time to vote, a sincere thanks from me.
And the participation has been steady, which is great. Because we've seen in past tournaments where it's kind of dropped, you know, round by round. But this, I feel like, has really stayed up. So I don't know if just the dedicated fan base is bigger or the people who were kind of outside the sphere voting have kept coming, which is cool, too, either way. That's really cool. I'm really excited that we've seen that sustained. And I think now that we get into the matchups, we'll get even, you know, tougher in a way because you don't have to, you know, you can't fall back on, well, at least I could take four of these, you know. now you get a pick between
the two.
All right. So that'll do it. We've been barred from the no hold, so hope you enjoy that. And be sure to keep working on your GW tag team list. Tyler Kelly's been putting out content as well at PlayStation.com, so check that out too. Facebook.com/PlayStation, Twitter, PlayStation. Do everything. Shop with us, PlayStation.com/Amazon. For Aaron, I'm JT, the jockass. We are out. Dookie dookie everywhere. We'll talk to you soon.
My moment of happiness was talking to you again. Right over to the TV page.